other. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, out of the gates, we have General Hamid Ghul, and of course, he was the head of Pakistani intelligence back in the 1980s. He went on CNN on Sunday night on one of their international programs and talked about the fact that he believed 9/11 was an inside job and that the Mumbai attacks, formerly Bombay, were also an inside job. As you know, we have detailed that that was a false flag attack carried out by Western intelligence, clearly in India, as a pretext to start World War III between the two nations. There were also calls, the Pakistani government has now said, that were officially made, confirmed with the phone records from the Indian Foreign Ministry, saying, we are going to attack you, attempting to trick the Pakistanis into launching some type of attack, and that almost happened. And so for the next 30 minutes, I'm very honored to be joined by General Hamid Ghul, and General joining us from Pakistan. Thank you so much for coming on with us today.
You're welcome.
Just out of the gates, I was told by your son that you were not happy with the CNN interview, that they edited you. So you've got the floor, sir. We're not going to edit you. You are live. So tell the world what is really going on.
Well, at the moment, we have to look at this great human tragedy that took place in Bombay. I sympathize with India. They've been rocked very badly. And their response is a bit nervous. They want to go to war with Pakistan if Pakistan does not behave or does not hand over whoever they want from us. They have given a list of people. But I think there has been a long record of the Indians accusing Pakistan whenever something like this happens. And in the past, they have turned out to be every time wrong. Of course, Pakistan is willing to cooperate, and I think that's a good position that President Zardari has taken, that you provide the evidence and we will try them out, we will arrest them, we will put them to trial, and you can come and watch, see, let the international cameras come and see, and there should be a transparent, open trial, and if that does not satisfy you, then what else will? So this is the situation where we stand today. There is an ominous threat from India, and America seems to be quietly patting them on the back and asking Pakistan to do whatever India is demanding. Now, this is an unfair position because India is not like America. America demanded from Pakistan back after 9/11 to cooperate and hand over anybody that Pakistan could lay their hands on. 700 or so people were caught in Pakistan. They were sent to Guantanamo Bay, to Bagram, and to Kandahar jails, and nothing came out. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the only one who is being tried in that case. All others have been let off. So to get innocent people like that, just because you accuse them and you don't even provide the evidence, you pick them up and shove them in jail, this is not on. I think this belittles the human values that particularly democracies uphold and they talk so much about. So I think Pakistan's offer is good enough. And today Pakistan cracked down on some of the defunct organizations. In fact, these were banned in the year 2002, immediately after 9/11. But there could be some maverick elements among them who would still, I won't rule out, could carry out on their own or in conjunction with some other forces such kind of atrocity. But we have to wait and see how it goes.
Okay, Mr. Ghul, General Hamid Ghul, please stay with us. We're going to break and come back in a long segment. Plenty of time for you to break down what's really happening, the serious tensions being risen due to what happened a few weeks ago in India. Please stay with us.
Big mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Reading from Wikipedia, General Hamid Ghul served as Director General of Pakistan's Inner Service Intelligence, ISI, during 87-89, mainly in the time when Benazir Bhutto was Prime Minister of Pakistan. He was instrumental in the anti-Soviet support of the Mujahideen in the Afghan War, 79-89, a pivotal time during the Cold War, and it goes on. And we have him online with us. We, of course, yesterday played the CNN TV interview he did that was heavily edited. This is live and is not edited. Going back to him in Pakistan, we've tried three different lines. This is the best one we have. We apologize. Our audio is not loud to him, is not very audible. And obviously his audio back to us is very, very broken up. But we nevertheless have him joining us, and we're very thankful. Sir, continuing on the CNN program, at least what they edited you to say, you talked about 9/11, the evidence being that 9/11 was an inside job, and the attacks in Bombay, now Mumbai, of a few weeks ago, that the evidence was it was an inside job. Can you go over the evidence that you believe that these are false flag events, sir, and why these false flag events are being staged?
Are you talking about 9/11?
Yes, sir.
Well, I have my own reasons. You know, Rod Norland was the senior reporter here. I think he was based in Islamabad at that time. And he came to me immediately after 9/11. And his version that I put out, it was given to the Newsweek, and unfortunately it was blocked. But it appeared on the internet, on the website of the Newsweek, and you can see it. I think it is dated 16th or 17th of September 2001. And in that I had said the same thing, and I still maintain that that's my position. I have following reasons for it. A, that 9/11 took place on the American soil. Not a single person has been caught inside America. Even though for doing such a job, I think a huge amount of logistic support is required in the area where such operation is carried out. Secondly, the air traffic control, when they saw that four aircraft were changing direction, going from east coast to west coast where they were headed, they started traveling in different directions. And it is quite amazing that for a very long period of time, the air traffic control did not report this, nor did the U.S. Air Force act in time. If one were to calculate from the first flight when it took off from Logan till the first aircraft, and the solitary aircraft that took off was an F-16, which took off from Langley, which is CIA's headquarters, instead of one of the operational bases. So many of them are available in that area. And then a single aircraft never takes off, because we have been told that whenever the aircraft scramble, they scramble in twos. And the time that it took was enormous. It was 112 minutes. So 112 minutes is a very long time in which to act. Was the U.S. Air Force sleeping? And if it was sleeping, which heads were rolled? Second, it was a huge intelligence failure, and no heads have been rolled. Nobody has been taken to task. Not a single person has resigned for this. Thirdly, the air traffic control should have been rehashed. They should have been turned inside out, but nothing of the sort happened. And finally, how come this is a coincidence that four transponders did not work, and it is not possible? The direction is changed and it is not noted. Secondly, the U.S. Air Force has the ability, because in the past, whenever a plane has been hijacked, the record is that within 7 minutes, the U.S. Aircraft has been on the wing of the hijacked aircraft. In this case, it did not happen. The U.S. alert system is so high and it is so sophisticated that if a missile was to take off from Moscow and was to head towards New York, it takes about 18 minutes. And the U.S. Air Force and the missile system is supposed to intercept it within 9 minutes. That means on the Atlantic or on the Pacific, it must stop that missile from coming in. The system is in place, but it did not work, and nobody tried to question this. Lastly, no inquiry has so far been held formally into the incident, and the whole world has been turned upside down. So many people have been killed. American economy is going into a meltdown, and everything has gone wrong with the world. And yet, no formal inquiry has been ordered by the U.S. government. So I really don't know. There are so many questions which hang in the balance. And then to top it all, they say that Atta Muhammad, who took training on a light aircraft in Miami for six months, he could have maneuvered a jumbo 757 from a height where it was traveling. The height was 9,000 and it came within seconds to a height of 1,000 and then went straight into its target. Now, this is not possible for a person who has been trained on a light aircraft to be able to do this.
Yes, sir.
And then there's no mention of the second aircraft. So there are a number of things which remain unanswered.
Yes, sir.
Whenever the journalists come and visit me here and I ask them these questions, that why haven't you taken the answers about this? They say that Patriotic Act comes in the way, and we are not supposed to ask such questions.
General, we are talking to General Hamid Ghul, the former head of Pakistani ISI during the key period fighting the Russians. He was also, before he was the head of ISI, one of the chiefs, according to our media, running operations against the Russians, and of course working with the United States closely, as well as the Saudi Arabians and the British. And if that's incorrect, correct me. General Ghul, what are the motives? We have PNAC with Dick Cheney saying they need a Pearl Harbor event. We have 44,000 U.S. troops massing in Tajikistan and Uzbekistan in the days before 9/11. We have Bush on September 10th, Newsweek reported, ordering the launch of attacks the next week. We have, of course, the buildings being blown up with explosives and all of the witnesses to that. Now the government admits that Building 7 did fall in free fall, was not hit by a plane. Specifically, sir, motives. Why would the military-industrial complex controlling the United States, why would they stage a 9/11 attack?
Well, I think after the Cold War, when the Reaganomics, it was known as, the inflation was very high and the domestic issues had to be addressed. But Bill Clinton's two tenures, they really amassed a lot of money. American economy went booming and he left a lot of money. And the hard-boiled Cold Warriors, when they came in, they found that the situation was ready. They had money and they had resources and they looked upon now the conquest of the world for which there was an opportunity window. The Muslim world was lying prostrate. Russia was not still picking up from its foreign position. China was not ready yet. And therefore, they looked upon it as an opportunity to go and do the following. And in this, I'm a soldier and I know that there has to be a single aim. But they mixed up the aims and they have botched up everything. First, they said that they would go into such strategic areas where there was no U.S. presence before, such as the Western Asia and South Asia, where there was no American physical presence and they wanted it there. They had to keep the Chinese off from getting into the Middle East. They had to lay their hands on the energy tap of the world, which presently lies in the Middle East, but in future it will be in Central Asia. And so Afghanistan is the gateway to Central Asia. And finally, to suppress any resistance, particularly which could threaten the state of Israel. Now that is where they, instead of pursuing the American objectives, they started pursuing the Israeli objectives. And that is where they went wrong. You have to pick up a single aim. This is the first principle of war. And I don't know why the generals and the politicians of America, they could be so naive and so ignorant that they started mixing aims. And they went into this war without wisdom, without particular preparation, and without the American support behind them. because if they had gone to vote and asked for support from the American people, they would have never given this support. So they had to create a pretext, and this was the pretext that they created.
General, we're going to break in a moment and come back with a final segment. Perhaps I can get you to stay a little bit longer because I want you to be able to speak unedited to the American people and the people of the world. I want to shift gears into Mumbai, what happened in India. Clearly the evidence of even the Indian intelligence chief, as you know, was saying that the Indian government was staging terror attacks on the train. An army captain was caught doing that and arrested. The chief of anti-terror was threatened. He was killed that day when it started in Mumbai. Now they have caught a anti-terror police officer giving cell phones to the supposed terrorists that they're saying came from Pakistan. We know the West is deeply in bed with some of the blocks of the former Mujahideen. Can you speak to that? General?
Can you hear me? I can't hear you properly, but can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir, I can hear you. When we come back, we will speak to what happened in India. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Good. Why they are staging terror attacks there, the evidence of false flag inside job in India. So when we return after this quick break with the former head of Pakistani intelligence, General Hamid Ghul, joining us from Pakistan. I am coming to you from Austin, Texas, hence the phone troubles. We'll work on those, sir, during the break. We will be right back. My websites, of course, are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back with this exclusive interview.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
We are back live. It is December 9th, 2008. General Hamid Ghul, one of the most famous members of and commanders of Pakistani intelligence, who worked in with the United States in the whole operation against the Russians, was the commander of those operations, is our guest with us graciously until 40 after. General, not wasting any more time, I listed earlier the fact that Indian intelligence captains in the army have been caught in India staging bombings. That's Indian news, that Indian intelligence and police have been caught giving cell phones to the supposed shooters. The police stood down, and only the anti-terror commanders that had said that India was staging terror, they were killed in the initiation of the attacks in Mumbai. That's some of the evidence of Mumbai being an inside job. Namely, why do you believe Mumbai is a staged event 2 weeks ago, A, and B, what is the motive?
Well, the motive is very simple, that Americans want Indians to come on board with them in their war against terror, especially when they have run out of troops in Afghanistan. The NATO allies are pulling out. They are dragging their feet. They are not prepared to fight there. But they want to make it an Indian cause, and they want nearly 150,000 troops in Afghanistan. That is one reason where there is an American motive. There is an Israel motive, which is similar, that the Americans should not pull out of Afghanistan just because they are short of troops, so they must have more troops there. Because if they go away without denuclearizing Pakistan, State of Israel will remain in under perpetual danger. So they have an innate fear that Americans may lose heart and pull out of this region. They are already going out of Iraq. And if they were to go out of Afghanistan as well, this will be an unfinished agenda, and that Israel would be at the losing end. So the neocons and the Zionists, they together want to hatch a conspiracy so that Obama gets trapped into a situation where for next 4 years he'll keep on sorting out this imbroglio. As far as the ability is concerned, which is the other element, can you imagine that people traveling from Karachi in two rickety boats, they can travel all the way to Bombay and then go into action immediately and fight a battle for 72 hours, and there are just 10 of them, and in each group there were two. This is impossible. They were carrying so much of munitions with them, and that munition lasted. They were fighting virtually the crack troops of the Indian Army for so long. And you know that in Narima House, the five Jewish hostages, they were killed by the Indian commandos. They were not killed by these people. So why would the Indian commandos kill them? And Israelis suppressed this information. It initially came out in one of the Indian Israeli dailies, but then it was suppressed. So if you go by the record of the Indian accusations against Pakistan, in the past, in year 2001, on December 13, there was an attack on the Indian Lok Sabha, and they blamed Pakistan and Lashkar-e-Taiba for it, but it turned out that these were Indian Kashmiris themselves. And because India is committing so much of atrocities in Kashmir, therefore there is a good reason for them that they would carry out something like that. Then they again, in 2006, there was this Samjhota Express case in which 68 passengers, mostly Pakistanis, were killed. And this train was stopped at an obscure railway station in Haryana, and then doors were locked and the train was set on fire. And again, this was the claim that it was Pakistani Lashkar-e-Taiba, and that they had done it because they wanted to derail the peace process. But now Colonel Srikant Prohat has been caught in it, and there are other Indian officers who are his accomplices, and he has a big network. They took the RDX from Deolali depot, which is a military depot. So one can say that there is a deep penetration of the militant Hindus in military and intelligence organization in India. So in this case, why would they not do that? Because they want to again derail this process. And when Obama says that he will mediate on Kashmir, and there is a Kashmiri political movement picking up momentum, and in this situation, he said that he would send Bill Clinton as the mediator. Obviously, the militants in India do not want this to happen, and they had to preempt it. So Pakistan doesn't gain, the Pakistani ISI doesn't gain anything from it. The net beneficiary is either the militant Hindus.
Stay there, sir. We have to break. We have to break,
General. On their next election. And
waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, a rare interview, extremely enlightening. We're talking to the former head of Pakistani intelligence, the ISI. I want to thank Paul Watson, who we've got on the line, who's going to pop in with a question or two. I want to thank Simon over in the UK for getting us this number. And I want to thank Aaron for staying up late last night to get the producing job done to get this interview right here on the GCN Radio Network. General, continuing with motive, I have the headline here. Pakistan asserts hoax war call was real. Press minister fingers India High Commission as source of reports that threatening cell call was fake. As you know, this is in most of the major Pakistani papers. The government has the caller ID and the phone records that the threatening call saying that India was going to attack within minutes of the terrorist attacks beginning in Mumbai a few weeks ago, this provocative call within minutes saying India was going to attack Pakistan, attempting to get Pakistan, I guess, to move troops to the border and have a conflict. And the media saying that a possible war between the two thermal nuclear powers was narrowly averted. Can you speak to that?
Yes, indeed. I think the Americans and the Indians both have been very responsible about it, because Condoleezza Rice's statement in America, in India, when she went and visited Delhi, they were very threatening towards Pakistan, and it was sort of a dictation that you have to satisfy India. Now, this is amazing that Pakistan had to satisfy India. On what score? Indians have still to come out with the evidence. And as far as this one man that they have caught, who knows that this is not a bogey and that this man was loitering around somewhere. There are lots of Pakistanis who cross the border illegally or legally, and he could have been picked up, and he's become the front man for singing all those stories. So one doesn't really know. It's too early to start threatening war against Pakistan, because Pakistan is a nuclear country, and if they brandish their power, conventional power, then I can assure you that as a soldier, I will say that a conventional war, limited war within the nuclear environment is not possible in the subcontinent. And if it comes to exchange of nuclear weapons, then this becomes a third world war. China cannot stay out. Russia will not stay out. Russia is already showing its belligerence towards America and Europe. And China, of course, is a very major economic power. They are a nuclear power. And if this thing happens in their backyard, they will not accept it. So this is a very dangerous situation. I think it's playing with the fire. So the whole thing is could get out of hand. It is, again, as I told you, that the part of the unfinished agenda that neocons had in their mind, and they think that now Obama will carry it out, even though the Americans want a change. But let's look at what change means. Obama has not very clearly enunciated what change would be, but one can assume that change means focusing on the domestic issues. There is an economic meltdown, the car industry is going sick, and many other things are happening inside America, the social welfare and the Medicare, etc. So in all these things, there is a need for the new administration to focus entirely on the domestic issues.
Well, General.
And for that, it will have to disengage externally.
General, as you know, in the last 3 months before Obama was even elected, he said Pakistan and Afghanistan would be his main focus. The strikes inside Pakistan, it's clear that his change means what Zbigniew Brzezinski wants, shifting what the RAND Corporation has said they want, shifting the war out of the Middle East into Central Asia. So I believe the change is going to be these provocations. Look at the neocons with Israeli and NATO-backed forces launching the sneak attack on the Russian-held South Ossetia on 888. So it appears that they are trying to launch a major, larger-than-a-theater war. As the RAND Corporation said a month ago, they want a major new war.
Yes, indeed, you are right, because this is an old theory, which is geostrategic theory, put out first by Mackinder and then by Mahan, who was an admiral in the U.S. Navy, that this is the rim land. You have to first control the rim land in Asia before you can strike in the heartland of Asia. So this heartland, rimland thing, I think it fits into the story. It fits into the picture that if they have a conflict in the rimland and they can control it, and then it becomes so much easier to go and penetrate into the heartland. But this is really asking too much at a state when America is not in a very healthy economic condition. So I think this is a brinkmanship of the highest order. And if they enlarge the area of conflict in this war against terrorism, and if they prolong the period of conflict, then America will definitely lose.
General.
Because I know that when you are fighting the irregular fighters, when area of conflict is enlarged, let's say it's extended into the tribal areas of Pakistan, or it is pushed into Kashmir as well, so that China can be monitored and watched quite easily, then the area will become larger, and the U.S. simply does not have the troops. And there is not a moral cause strong enough for the American people to be mobilized behind it.
So that's why they stage.
This is sheer madness to be thinking of such things at this time.
So that's why they need proxies like India to destabilize the region for the encirclement of Russia and, of course, China blocking those pipelines. Now, sir, in the time we've got left, you worked with the United States, with Saudi Arabia, with Israel, or at least Pakistan did, fighting the Russian invasion. Of course, if these reports are incorrect, correct me, but you were one of the main commanders helping the Mujahideen. Then you were the head of Pakistani intelligence right at the time that you finally had the victory against the Russians. It is reported here that Al-Qaeda was founded by the new Secretary of Defense Gates and Zbigniew Brzezinski, that they were the Wahhabist fighting corps, and that they are now being used to try to bring down the Pakistani government and to stage attacks inside India. So can you speak with your particular expertise to that, and then also the fact that they're trying to now list you as a terrorist? And then thirdly, did you ever meet Osama bin Laden? Is Osama bin Laden dead many years ago of kidney failure, as Benazir Bhutto said?
Well, I was actually in charge of operations against the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, and the Americans were providing the logistic support, and Saudis were sharing one half of the budget for this war, and it was a cheap war because in all those 10 years that we were fighting the Russians, we spent not more than $5 billion out of the American exchequer, so it was a very cheap war for the Americans to have defeated the Russians and rid the whole of the West of this red menace that they used to call. So at that time, Osama bin Laden and his colleague, they were admired and they were romanticized by the CIA operators. I had never met him then. I had nothing to do with him because I was only busy training the Afghans. We had to win a war. We had a task on our hand. It was a very big task. And we were so occupied with the training only the Afghans. No other national was trained by the ISI. I can vouch on that. Not a single person, not even a Pakistani, was trained by them. Osama bin Laden was, I had never met him, but these people used to come and talk glowingly about him. I met Osama bin Laden after my retirement from the army in 1993, December in Khartoum, and then again in year 1994, November, when I was there invited by Hassan bin Turabi to an international conference, and during that conference, Osama invited us to a banquet, and it was all in an open place, and where there were many other people present. He struck to me as a very normal human being, not a bloodthirsty animal that is being presented by the CIA now. At that time, no conversation between him and me took place. I don't know whether he's living or dead, but so far, Ayman al-Zawahiri has been representing him in various interviews of Osama that have been put out. So one doesn't really know, but the last interview, which was a voice interview, in that the CIA and the other U.S. intelligence agencies authenticated that it was Osama's voice. So one doesn't really know whether he's living or dead.
Well, sir.
But even if he's not living, he's now a symbol. Al-Qaeda is a franchise. Whoever created that and for whatever reason they created, I think it wasn't there until 1996 when he was lodged in Khartoum. Later on, he was invited by Burhanuddin Rabbani, who is now part of the Northern Alliance in Kabul, and he came over and he set up his headquarters in a place called Tora Bora near Jalalabad. But that's where one started hearing of Al-Qaeda and the activities of Osama bin Laden.
General.
And also of the fact that his commander was responsible for bringing the Black Hawk down, the famous operation in Mogadishu, where an American aircraft was brought down by a Stinger, which had probably been supplied in Afghanistan to Afghan Mujahideen.
Okay, General. General, I need to, in the time we have left here, because we've only got a few minutes left with you here, maybe 5 minutes and we're going to break, and I don't want to keep you any longer. We can perhaps have you back up in the future. Specifically, though, we know his CIA control name was Tim Osman. We know he was the bag man for a lot of the Saudi money and the Israeli money going in. I know that was compartmentalized and separate from Pakistani intelligence, from what I've read, from different perspectives and U.S. intelligence. So I believe you there. My whole point here is that clearly Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, didn't carry out the attacks of 9/11, as you yourself have said. And bin Laden, in his first interview, said that he didn't do it. Then they produced these computer-morphed videos and fake audios that have been checked. And the Intel Center, headed up by Rumsfeld's former lieutenant, the private group, was caught putting the same video layer in with the original video, so it's been proven that they're creating these fake videos.
Yes, there is no doubt about it, that this video, which was put out in November by George Bush and said this was Osama bin Laden, he was a high cheekbone, like the mongoloid features, he wasn't as tall as Osama bin Laden was, and one could clearly make out that this was doctored, this had been created on purpose just to justify the attack on Afghanistan. I think there are many things which are going wrong or being done on behest of the government by the CIA, which are not correct. CIA used to be good when they were working with us, but I don't know what happened thereafter. Well, I think it is their overarching ambition, or it is their fear that America would lose its clout, whatever the reason, or it is perhaps the Israeli fear that they are surrounded by a sea of hostile enemies who could, if the Americans don't now at this point in time, they don't deliver a fatal blow to all their enemies, then Israel, who have a short shelf life, otherwise also because it is an artificial state, that they would probably not exist, or they would have...
General, you know, they have, in the time we have left, they have over 400 nukes. They have total dominance. No one could attack them with nukes. They have the anti-missile defense systems. I believe it's a red herring that they want to start World War III for their, quote, safety. It's World War III that will destroy Israel.
Yes, indeed. And I think this 2006 September experience, I think if it is any indicator for them, when they
Hezbollah.
Went into southern Lebanon and they got such a buffeting at the hands of Hezbollah, I think they dare not do something like that, because this would mean annihilation of Israel. And in any case, this Palestinian question is a very thorny question, and I don't know why the U.S. administration is not addressing it differently.
Okay.
Instead of these two different states, there should be one Abrahamic state of Palestine.
General.
Because all the three religions which claim that they are divine religion, they have their origin in Palestine, and I think something new has to be thought about.
All right.
But unfortunately, Bush administration, in its at the advent of its tenure, it said that they would sort out this Palestinian issue by creating two states.
All right.
After 8 years, we have gotten nowhere at all.
All right, General, we're almost out of time. Two final questions, and I'm going to let you go. And you can any websites, any books, any materials you'd like to point people at to see your side of the story, we'd love to see it. Two questions. Let me give them both to you and then answer them, please. Number one, why are they trying to now list you as a terrorist, A, when they admittedly worked with you, B, why do they always betray people like Saddam, who they worked with and set up? So, A, why are they trying to now set you up? B, where do you see the Pakistan-India situation going? Do you see the West staging more terror?
Yes, I think they are simply afraid of me because I worked with them, I understand them, I can measure them up, and I talk loudly about it. I mince no words, I pull no punches. And they are afraid that I preempt whatever scheming they do. And I am loud-voiced, there is no doubt about it. And I speak the truth, they are trying to frame me, there is no truth in it. If they had anything about me, when I applied for a renewal of my visa to America, why did they not give it to me? Because if they have something, they are looking around for terrorists, why this terrorist wants to come over and visit America, nab me, interrogate me, take me to task, take me to court, do whatever you like. It only shows that they have a malafide. As far as Saddam Hussein is concerned, this is their habit. It is a very bad habit. They cultivate friends who become like Pervez Musharraf, dictators, and then they make use of them, and then they turn upon them, and in fact, the nation suffers because of their policies. And what was the last part of your question?
All right,
where is the India-Pakistan relation going?
Sir, hold on one moment, General. John,
yes,
Hold on, General. General, one moment, because I only have a few minutes left. John, skip this network break for stations. I'm skipping because I'm going to let him go in 3 minutes. I don't want to hold him any longer, but I'm skipping this break because this is too newsworthy. Yes, sir, I'd like you to answer that question about what do you think, knowing them, working with the globalists, the New World Order, in the past when it was still America, before we were totally dominated, what do you think their next moves are probably most probable, A? And then finally, the attacks against the government in Pakistan using Muslim fronts, does that appear to be the West trying to destabilize your government? They keep trying to kill the government. They killed Bhutto. They keep bombing government buildings. They keep bombing hotels. It appears the West is using false Mujahideen to try to overthrow Pakistan.
No, Benazir was not killed by any of the terrorists. She was removed by Americans because she had violated her agreement because they wanted to keep Pervez Musharraf there and he slapped another martial law on Pakistan. So she had become rebellious, and such a person who is a popular leader of a third world country, head of the largest political party, a woman who they could not attack as fundamentalist because she was so westernized. Therefore, it was very important for them to remove her because they have a mischievous plan which they want to put through. So they have installed instead Mr. Zardari, whom they can blackmail very easily, but have allowed him to keep the powers that of a dictator. And in fact, he is the one who is calling all the shots in Pakistan. So if at all, Pakistan is already destabilized politically. Our judicial institution simply does not exist because there is a judicial crisis. Recently, the dethroned Chief Justice of Pakistan.
Yes, who is staging the terror attacks? Because they're clearly aimed at the government, or is that the government staging them as a pretext to crack down?
No. This is because Lal Masjid was attacked, and I think George Bush addressed his nation on radio immediately after that, said this was part of our plan in war against terrorism, because they were suspecting that Pakistan Army and the inter-services intelligence were not fully cooperating, and because they did not consider it was their war. Therefore, they created this situation where the terrorists, out of sheer revenge, this is called Pakhtun Wali. This is a tradition. It has nothing to do with Islam. It is the Afghans were beholden to this tradition long before they became Muslim, and they are still carrying it out. When you take action against an Afghan, kill his daughter or his wife or his sister, he will take revenge, no doubt. What happens then? He does not behave like a Muslim or any other entity. So this was a thing which was created. And, of course, Pakistan is now in a very difficult position. We only have a stable military institution which can control the condition, and we have an ISI, but the Americans are almost every day attacking the ISI and attacking the military, saying that this is not under control of the political party,
sir,
the political power.
Sir, General.
But what is political power when parliament is sinecure? It does not work. It has no authority at all.
General, going back to 9/11, Pakistani papers, BBC reported, New York Times reported, $100,000 was reportedly wired by General Mahmoud Ahmed, the head of Pakistani intelligence, to the lead hijacker, who we know is a U.S. government decoy trained at U.S. bases. That's Newsweek, AP Reuters. General Mahmoud Ahmed, do you believe he really was being controlled by the CIA? Did he really wire $100,000 to Muhammad Atta?
Not at all. Mahmoud is a friend of mine. I met him very recently in Lahore, and he categorically denies this. I think this is all disinformation which have been adopted as a very sophisticated intelligence art.
So just to be clear, we're going to let you go, and we're very thankful and respectful of your time. You believe that the bombings and terror attacks and shootings that we've seen the last few months in Pakistan are because the Predator drones and helicopters are killing weddings, which you always notice it's a wedding that's meant to stir up the people there because it kills whole families. It's a huge insult. And then, of course, they blow up NATO cars. Of course, they then attack the government. Is that what you're saying?
This is retaliatory, and they will retaliate. I can tell you that Afghanistan nation is such that over 5,000 years, nobody has won against them. And I think the Americans cannot win unless American intention is to stir up a third world war from this point. I think there is no point in staying in Afghanistan. You should negotiate with the opposition, which is a national resistance now. It is no longer Taliban specific. It is the Afghan nation, true to their tradition. They are resisting ferociously.
General, how long can the mayor of Kabul stay in power? And isn't this really just about the West controlling the opium?
Well, he's a puppet of Kabul, and he will not stay very long. I can assure you that he's already started showing signs of nervousness. He wants to reach out to the Taliban, but Taliban would not even throw a crumb at him. I can assure you the Taliban or any other resistance fighters, they will have nothing to do with Karzai.
Well, Reuters is reporting as you know, every major city is now encircled, and only a few cities are controlled by the U.S. force.
I have no idea, but I think the vibes have started coming out, like Robert Kagan's article in Washington Post on December 2nd. It echoes what is the World at Risk report. It is similar. They are focusing on Pakistan because Pakistan's nuclear capability is undigestible by State of Israel and by India. And therefore, there is every possibility that Pakistan becomes a target.
In closing, and this is it, we appreciate all your time. This hour is over in 2 minutes, sir. What do you see happening? I know you can't predict the future, but do you see them staging a nuke attack? Do you see them staging more terror attacks? Do you see India sneak attacking? Do you see a more radical government coming in after the staged events? What do you see happening, bad case scenario?
No, Indians are not so stupid. I think they have seen through the game. And the leftist parties, that is the left front, they are called, the communist parties in India, are very strong. India is slowly turning towards its own problems. The Shine India, Shining India, Feel Good India, this is all make-believe. I can tell you that this is a propaganda hype about India. India is in a miserable state. Their economy is also dwindling, and 400 million are living on less than $1 a day. And this is beginning to have effect because last year alone, 108,000 farmers of India committed suicide. And this will not go on. Out of 608 districts of India, 231 are already in turmoil and mostly under the control of Maoist and the Naxalites.
So they are collapsing.
Yes. So India itself has lots of problems of their own.
You're right. The GMO cotton made them commit suicide because it destroyed their lives. Well, General General Hamid Ghul, thank you so much for joining us. Any websites, any books, any materials you think people should read to learn more?
Thank you, sir.
Any books or websites that you think people should read to learn more?
Oh, I don't have a website. Unfortunately, but I think you have a website. They can read all my talks.
Absolutely. We'll post the audio and a transcript at InfoWars.com.
Okay.
Let me say bye to you as this hour ends as we go to break, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with the second hour. Again, I want to thank General Hamid Ghul. An amazing exclusive, folks, unedited live.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
I know a lot of our affiliates join us in the second, third, and fourth hour. Boy, did you miss it, but I'm going to re-air it. That interview is so powerful and so important. Definitely going to re-air some of it today and all of it tomorrow. It'll be posted at InfoWars.com. We just had General Hamid Ghul, the former head of Pakistani intelligence that ran the operations against the Russians, talking about everything, the CIA staging videos of bin Laden. I got most of my questions out. I didn't get into how the FBI doesn't have bin Laden on the most wanted list That was unedited, live, on air. And I had Paul Watson waiting in the wings, but it was, Gould was bringing out so much. I never got to Paul. I knew he had some questions. He'd been holding for an hour. Kind of the post game here, Paul, what did you think of that?
Well, I think he spilled the beans on just about everything, didn't he, Alex? I didn't expect him to be so explicit in, going on record as saying that America was behind the Bhutto assassination, the Bin Laden tapes are staged. Obviously, he told CNN what he thought about 9/11, but they never gave him the time to go into detail about it, which he did on this interview. And perhaps that's, we've heard a few of the reasons today why the US government is trying to put him on a terrorist list and get the UN Security Council to denounce him as a terrorist, because he's certainly turning out to be somewhat of a thorn in the side after being
that's why he's spilling the beans for now, because he knows if he gets it all out, there's no reason to go after him.
That could be it. And I mean, obviously, he's been accused of doing everything under the sun. He's accused of being the mastermind of the group, the Pakistani terror group that's been blamed for Mumbai. He's been accused of creating the Taliban. He was accused of being the man in 1998 who tipped off Bin Laden that the US were about to launch the missile strike on him because they had tracked his satellite phone. And then even in 2004, according to this article out of India, he was identified as being Bin Laden's master planner behind 9/11. So he's been accused of just about doing everything. Obviously, you're denying it all.
Oh, he made NORAD stand down and made the U.S. troops mass around Afghanistan, and he made the U.S. embassies let the supposed hijackers back into the country, according to Reuters and Newsweek. No, it was our government, our illegitimate criminal government.
Right, so he's obviously fallen out of favor with them, and now, because he did work with them at one point with the Mujahideen in the
80s. I talked about how they set up Saddam. I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm not saying any of these guys are great guys. The point is the U.S. works with them or creates them and then stabs them in the butt.
Exactly, which seems like it's happening to him now with the, even though he's publicly said that he will go to the UN and, quote, present himself for inquisition before a UN commission to clear himself of charges that he had links to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. So he's fully prepared to do that. And I don't think they'll let him do it, though, because it'll only give him another opportunity to have a public platform.
Well, I put the question to him about Bin Laden. And, I mean, he's a former intelligence chief. I'm sure he wasn't saying everything, and there might have been some deception in there, no doubt, to protect himself. But we know what the record is, and we know they did keep the operation compartmentalized with the Saudi side, the British side, the U.S. side, and the main side with Pakistan, directly funneling the weapons in. But then the CIA did a lot of the training. Just an amazing interview, Paul. I mean, how do you put all that into one article? I hope you and Steve and everybody else, Kurt Nemo, we need stories on all of this, Paul. This was just absolutely amazing. I'm glad your source in London, Simon, gave us his phone number to get a hold of his son. And just a blockbuster interview.
Exactly, it was.
Absolutely blockbuster. I want you to stay there, though. I want to shift gears just for five more minutes with you. The major British newspaper has come out and admitted world government is being set up. Okay, this is in everybody's face. And now for world government is the headline.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
In closing on the General Hamid Ghul interview, we made contact with him yesterday afternoon and then confirmed the interview at around 11 o'clock last night, about 9 in the morning their time. And so my whole team, the folks that worked on this were Aaron Dykes, Paul Watson, and Derek worked on it some too. So we just want to thank everybody for that interview coming through. And a journalist we've worked with, I don't know if he wants his name mentioned, so I won't bring it up, in London, lives next door to some of the family relations to the Gould family. And so that's how we were able to get that for you, ladies and gentlemen, on the heels of the CNN interview where they heavily edited him. And we're just bringing you both sides here. And I agree with the information he's bringing out because it fits with all the evidence and the investigations we've done on each and every one of these cases, the globalist operations, their past operations, and currently what's happening. So they've had army captains, army colonels. This is in the Indian news. Everything he was saying is in the news in India. And he's right when he said India has now woken up. And for a few days, they were like, yes, attack, attack India. Now they're going, wait a minute. And they're finding out it was staged. Now, here in the United States, they're not. But just absolutely amazing. And we will post that audio interview for everybody at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. And we will hopefully, we have great listeners that volunteer it. I don't have the staff that does it, but I hope that a transcript will be made by our listeners of that interview. And then email to Aaron at InfoWars.com. We'll check it for accuracy. And then get it posted, and that'd be a great service to everyone to be able to read that transcript. I know Paul will listen and do limited transcripts because you know he can't transcribe the whole thing and then still write the article. We just don't have the staff. We just don't have the personnel. That's why we need capital. You know, the Ron Paul money bomb brought in $249,000, and we bought the most inexpensive robotic cameras and switcher. The whole package was like $25,000. Sounds expensive. That is ultra cheap. The next cheapest are like $40,000. You know, we bought the cheapest broadcast desk that looks good. We bought the cheapest plasma screen TVs that'll look good on television. But we did buy good microphones, good hardware, more cameras. Our cameras, half of our three expensive cameras have been broken by police in Denver and New York and had microphones pointing the wrong direction and were broken lenses. So we bought three new cameras. In the next few weeks, I'm so busy fighting the New World Order with my radio show and the interviews and everything we do and setting up guests and working on websites and paying bills and dealing with human services things in my office. I'm so busy doing all of that. Wow, the power just went off in the office. I'm on backup right now. Good thing we've got backup batteries. Oh, man. I wonder how long I'll be on in here. These batteries usually work about 30 minutes. I need money to buy a bigger one. We need money to buy a generator. Hold on just a minute. I just came back on. Total circus in here. Anyways, and so I get so busy covering guests and information, I hardly get to my sponsors. And, you know, everything we do, bandwidth, better servers, money. More riders, more employees, money, cameras, plane tickets, flying Webster Tarpaulin to make the Obama video. All of that, and that's why I appreciate all of you that are PrisonPlanet.tv members. I appreciate all of you that do buy the books and videos at InfoWars.com, that do call the toll-free number and order the books and videos that we have discounted. 9/11 Inside Job ball caps and T-shirts as low as $5.95. My films as low as $5.95. A lot of other books and videos by other researchers we carry. Please, this Christmas season, this holiday season, don't go fight in the malls if you're going to buy stuff. Don't, you know, all that. Give the gift of knowledge and information. Go to InfoWars.com, order books and videos. Get your orders in by the 17th, and you'll get it before Christmas. UPS Ground. Again, InfoWars.com or 888-253-3139. 888-253-3139. There's still time if you, you know, mail it off the next three or four days to get your mail orders in. If you want to write to us, 3001 South Lamar, Suite 100, Austin, Texas, 78704. You can also write to Alex Jones, again, at 3001 South Lamar, Suite 100, Austin, Texas, 78704. And order the books and videos that way. And the best way to instantly fight the New World Order is get a $5.95 a month PrisonPlanet.tv membership, monthly trial, or get a yearly and get 5 months free right now on the special, more than 5 months free that we're running. 5.3 months if you want to get technical free. That's what it came out to. At PrisonPlanet.tv, all my films, hundreds of in-studio reports, the live feed, we do it for at least 1 hour every day. That's about to really get super professional in the new studio. I'll be going live out of there Friday, by the way. I'll be doing a test broadcast tomorrow at 4 p.m. for 1 hour just on the web at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. So, but then it'll be on the AM and FM affiliates and everything Friday. So that is coming up. Takes a lot to feed all of this. But I'm proud of my team, proud of my crew, proud of everything they're doing. And just want to thank all of them. But do financially support us at PrisonPlanet.tv. I mean, let me give you an example. We bought a $4,000 piece of equipment. Can't buy them used. It's so new that if the internet streams go down, being fed by our T1s or cable modems or DSL, which happens all the time when we refeed the stream, this piece of equipment automatically flips over to another channel without you ever even knowing. That's where the funds go. And we could do a lot more if we had more funds. We are blowing through the Ron Paul money. I think I've spent about $160,000 of that so far with the new office and we haven't even hired new people yet. And then I've got to get it on Dish Network or DirecTV. I'm working on prices there. You got to buy the time if you're like us to do a once-a-week hour show. If that works, I'll do 5 days a week. I mean, you know, we're really busting our hind ends here, and I appreciate everybody's support in the 6 months since the money bomb, which was not my idea. Folks just did it, so I got behind it. I've learned in this fight, I'm not ashamed to ask for capital, because what we can do with that seed money is absolutely amazing. And then we bring in all these other groups and activist groups and then energize them with activist and capital, thanks to you, the best audience in the world. Okay, enough for me going on that 3 or 4 minute diatribe. I want to talk to Paul for the rest of this segment, and then we're going to shift gears to children being kidnapped and dying in foster care. I see these articles every day. And now for a world government. This is the Financial Times of London, the most respected newspaper in the world. The real paper of record, where they do throw it in your face, is the Financial Times of London. Whereas other papers are 90% spin and lies, or they'll tell you the truth but then say it's a good thing, the Financial Times of London will throw it in your face. They admitted 3 years ago they were going to implode the small banks and insurance companies, cut off liquidity to the world, and then the banks were going to set up world government. They admitted a year and a half ago that they were going to call it a bailout, but it would really be a takeover. Well, and now for a world government. And it's an article up on PrisonPlanet.com. We're linking to the article itself, and Paul Watson did a boil down of it. Financial Times editorial admits agenda for dictatorial world government. And it says in the article says we need world government because of terrorism, financial collapse, all of this, and they don't tell you that the globalists are staging that. But they admit it's going to be dictatorial, it's going to be a world dictatorship, but that's what we need. And it admits the major players have been secretly working for decades to set up world government run for and by the banks. You will pay carbon taxes to them. It's all there. And it links to reports that go into more detail. Now, are you going to hear Rush Limbaugh? Are you going to hear Sean Hannity? Are you going to hear any of these people? No, they're going to keep saying it doesn't exist because they have to neutralize conservatives. Liberals have been taught world government's good and sold on the Kool-Aid. Okay, a world socialist state. They're starting to wake up, too. Conservatives are who have to be manipulated. And if OxyContin had ever told the truth, he'd be off the air. So that's why he won't. Folks, they'll have a world emperor in 20 years, and they'll be saying it doesn't exist. Okay, Paul Watson, this is incredible. But, I mean, we've seen thousands of articles the last 2 months admitting New World Order, world government. But this is admitting it's dictatorial. It's incredible, Paul.
That's right. There was one about a week ago called Obama's New World Order, which was roughly around the same principles. But, yeah, this is an editorial by Gideon Rackman, who is the chief foreign affairs correspondent of Financial Times, which, of course, is staffed by top Bilderbergers. They're always represented at Bilderberg, in particular by Martin Wolf, the associate editor. So it's the establishment newspaper. It's the newspaper of the elite.
Yeah, it's not the New York Times. It's about to go bankrupt, by the way, having to mortgage its building to stay in business for 200 and something mil. This is it. And again, we can't live in denial anymore, folks, all of you out there. Stop acting like children and denying this, Paul.
Well, that's right. I mean, you were called a nutcase throughout the 90s. Other people have been called similar for decades, for warning that we were moving towards this centralized global government. And this article lays it all out and admits it. And the telling thing about it is that it says that a system of world government basically will only be successful if it's anti-democratic, because it makes reference to the expansion of the EU and the fact that every time they put the expansion of the EU to a vote, like in Ireland recently, and they're trying to get that pushed through again, you know, if they just vote no, they just have another vote. The people always reject it because they hate it and they know it's anti-democratic.
And by the way, despite the media universally hailing it, it failed in Ireland this year. They're already bringing it back up to another vote.
Yeah, they just keep having another vote until they say yes. They just keep beating it into people. And this article admits that the only way this global government is going to be successful is if it's anti-democratic and dictatorial.
Well, I mean, the Pentagon, the Ministry of Defense all say that. That's what NAFTA got. We're now 15 years into that. Look what it's done to us. They don't care. They're doing it. And the yuppies have been taught that world government doesn't exist, so they walk around reading their luxury clothing catalogs, sucking their thumbs, acting cool, posing and preening for each other. Stay there.
Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another flash.
All right, final segment with Paul Watson. Then I've got a gentleman coming on, Greg Pound. They kidnapped his children years ago. The lady that did it even lost her job for it. They say, we're not giving them back. He's in the nightmare system of Florida. His wife had another baby and had to flee. And just every day I see where foster care kills another child. I mean, I'm not even looking for these news stories. And I mean, every time I hear on the news about some child caught in chains or in a cage, they hardly ever say it was foster care, but I'll go Google the local stories and then dig deep and then sure enough find out it's always, I mean 99% of the time, foster care. They live in cages, they torture them, they rape them, they sell them to sex slavery. The Texas Youth Commission, don't believe me, Google it, tens of thousands of children, they sell them. They have prostitution operations in the prisons. You know, those are the 10 and 12 and 13 year olds. This is hell released. It's going on all around you. That's why I stand against the New World Order, regardless of what happens to my life or my fortune, my blood, my family. I will fight these people. They have to be fought. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. In closing, Paul, I know you got to get busy on this huge interview we did in the first hour that was just ultra massive with the former head of Pakistani intelligence. Huge, exclusive, unedited, live. We've got to do more on this in the next few weeks. I mean, I want to put out some articles. You know, I'm giving orders to armies that don't exist, but everybody else should. Challenging Limbaugh, challenging Hannity. You know, and like post 20 or 30 mainstream articles with government leaders and politicians calling for world government, saying New World Order means global government. And they still have all these think tanks and talk show hosts saying there's no New World Order, it doesn't mean world government, when they admit it means that. I mean, we were right about how they were going to put troops on the streets. We were right about getting rid of the governors in emergencies. We were right about Posse Comitatus ending. We were right about them imploding the economy. We are right about everything because we're reading the white papers. We're reading what they say. And literally, you've got the governor now arrested by the FBI up in Illinois. 3 months ago, he announces they're using National Guard door-to-door, confiscating guns in cities where they're banned, and it doesn't even make news. I mean, it just I saw a story out of Atlantic City where the whole government's corrupt, and it was admitting that it's just all total criminality. I mean, everything's falling apart, Paul, and I know it's bad in England. They're now the police knocked into a 70-something-year-old guy with a cigarette, no criminal record, a wealthy guy. They knocked the cigarette out of his hand. This is in the Globe and Mail today, and said, oh, you littered, and then gave him a $130 fine, a 60-pound fine. I mean, it's just government is just rampaging with evil right now. Every parasite, every nimwit, every scumbag is joining it. Go ahead.
That's right, but people are still in denial, even though today it's right out in the open in the Financial Times with this article, this editorial, and now for a world government. The key quote in it is, quote, international governance tends to be effective only when it is anti-democratic. So there it is right now, right there. It's saying it has to be dictatorial to have any kind of success. And one thing that we make reference to quite often is that whenever these elitists or these globalists are confronted by people who say you want to create a new world order, which is essentially a global centralized government, unrepresentative of people and antagonistic to any form of democracy.
It's a world dictatorship by the financial elite, in David Rockefeller's words.
But they say it's not global government, it's global governance, as if there's any difference. Well, in this article, it admits that fact that global governance is just a euphemism for global government.
Well, in the dictionary, it means the system of government. So
right.
It means government or to govern. I mean, that's how it's disdained for the public. They openly set up world government. I mean, Texas isn't even run by the state anymore. It's all international run. They're grabbing the power plants, the roads, federalizing, and then handing that over. All our ports are being handed over nationwide. It's over. And we could turn it around. It's all illegitimate, but they tell the public, oh, honey, it doesn't exist. I mean, total disdain for the public.
Well, this is what's admitted to in this article. It says they have to use soothing language to prevent people from reaching for their rifles in America's talk radio heartland. That's a direct quote. And then he quotes Jax Attali, who's an advisor to President Nicolas Sarkozy of France, who argues that, quote, global governance is just a euphemism for global government.
See, they want our guns. The Financial Times, the foreign international affairs editor, they're openly saying they are neutralizing you with soothing language through Rush Limbaugh. Laughing. None of it exists. This is high treason. Paul, it's incredible. Great job, my friend. Great job on the article, okay?
Thanks, Alex.
Good job. We're going to cover this more tomorrow. We've got to fight them. They're kidnapping our children. That's part of a world government policy to break up the family, stated in thousands of government documents. It's policy. They're putting poison in your water and food. It's all admitted. Sapiens sapiens, and the great mission we have to people the stars. We will defeat the new world order. We will defeat the parasites. We will unlock our minds and move on to the next level in human development. This is my commitment to you, and I ask you to commit to me and to the rest of humanity together to get out there and wake up everybody we know, to spread the word and the good message of freedom and liberty, and to expose the global parasite state that is the New World Order crime syndicate, that is really the old world order of feudalism. Okay, you know, Greg Pound was set up for the show, and the last time we set him up, his phone works fine until we try to call him, and it doesn't work. Type of headlines I have: both sides blame children's agency. A boy in foster care, severely brain damaged. The foster parents had begged for help. Oh, they had begged for help, but, I mean, it's just constant. You know, they're dying, being killed, on and on and on and on and on and on. Why didn't Polk County Sheriff's Office investigate deputies' role? And it just goes on and on. These are the type of stories I have, so we'll be getting into that when he joins us. I wanted to just briefly get back into this. This is such a big deal. I mean, does it insult you out there that you were taught by Rush Limbaugh and taught by Bill Clinton, who would also get up and say there's no such thing as a new world order, there's no plan for global government, NAFTA and GATT aren't global government, or Bush saying there's no such thing as a North American Union when they signed it in secret in 2005, and then lawsuits were made, and the documents got released, and the first thing was keep this secret from the public. We're going to have carbon taxes. We're going to regulate everything. We're going to take over all the major highways and tax everybody to fund the North American Union government. We're going to put the capital in Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, this is going on, ladies and gentlemen, and they're doing it. They're doing it. And they know you don't want to go along, so they've abolished the governors under PDD 51, abolished the Congress. Congress is now ceremonial. We've had Inhofe and other senators and congressmen on record saying they were threatened with martial law. They didn't pass the banker takeover bill. As of last Wednesday, I haven't seen a new AP or Reuters article since last Wednesday, $8.4 trillion in 7 weeks stolen by offshore banks. $8.4 trillion! I want y'all to cop something out there that think none of this exists, the New World Order doesn't exist, or if it does, it's good. They're going to take your pension funds, too. Firefighters, school teachers, all of you. Auto workers, you're getting nothing. They're going to first cut back what you get and then tax what you get. They've already announced that in Congress. And within 5, 10 years, maybe even sooner, you will get nothing. Nothing. You understand? So go ahead. Go along with kidnapping people's children with a CPS with no due process or warrants and with a fraudulent family court system that doesn't have due process and isn't real in the name of protecting the children. Go ahead and go along with raiding people's houses for marijuana when the government ships in the heroin and cocaine and pushes all the other legal drugs that are much worse on the public. Go ahead and say there's no world government. Go ahead and say they're not bankrupting us by design. Go ahead and say I'm a liar. Go ahead, roll your sleeve up, take the flu shot every year. Go ahead and take it full of mercury. Go ahead and give your children all the shots you want. Go ahead and use a cell phone 10 hours a day up against your head. Go ahead and watch 4 hours of TV every day and get Alzheimer's. Literally causes brain damage. It lowers the brain waves. Don't believe me, just mainstream government studies. Go ahead and eat GMO soybeans and corn and rice. Go ahead and become sterilized. Go ahead and drink lots of fluoridated water. Go ahead and just believe whatever they tell you. Okay, don't check into eugenics. Like we're interviewing, you know, one of the top experts on genetically modified organisms yesterday, talking about a case where, you know, top scientist finds out that it's sterilizing all the rats and then actually changing their DNA and shriveling their testicles down to nothing and attacking the ovaries of the mice and rats. And then when the higher-ups, she's all freaked out about it, and they call her aside and they say, don't worry, we need to... There's too many people. We need to sterilize everybody. And then these yuppies go, well, there are too many people. Because they've been trained that's trendy to talk about, okay, well, you go look at the African kids or the kids on your street dying of cancer that they're being shot up with and the GMO causes. You go ahead and understand, jackass, it's happening to you too, you stupid idiot. I mean, I remember going back a year and a half ago, people walking to me on the street or I get emails or I'd be trying to warn people at church or, you know, wherever. I'd say, you know, they're imploding the economy by design. It's going to get really bad. And the stock market's going to drop by thousands and thousands of points, and they're going to rob the pension funds. And they go, I don't care. I don't own any stock. Everyone's designed now, conditioned, to not care about anybody but themselves. When you care about nobody, you fall apart. When you care about nobody, you lose control. You become a slave. Nobody cares about you. Do you understand that? That you got to put the big boy pants on and live in the real world and get out of your diapers? That corruption isn't cute and funny. It runs wild like cancer or like a staph infection, a flesh-eating bacteria. You understand? Stock market plunging affects everybody because it affects companies that capitalize and fund their expansion and operation and payroll with it. It affects everybody. It affects the company you work at. Even if you don't own stock, it affects everybody that does business with those companies. But you laugh about it. It's all funny. You've been trained to be self-assured, foolish people. Stop being arrogant. Stop being so self-satisfied. Stop thinking everything's okay. Admit there's world government. Admit classical tyranny's coming in. Admit, and you're like, I don't care. I've done nothing wrong. I like troops on the streets. I hope they arrest you. They're in my message comment boards every day saying that. I'm glad all this is happening. I can't wait till we get you. They even put their handle name, and you link through to their handle, and find them on MySpace, and they're troops, or they're bureaucrats, or they're nihilistic punk rockers, or whatever they are. It's always different groups. Don't you understand that tyranny is for you? They want the tyranny to lower your standard of living. They want the tyranny to hurt the society. But again, these people are such cowards, they psychologically, subconsciously decide to join with the evil rather than fight it. Okay? Because it's so scary to admit this is going on, they go, okay, it's real, and I like it. Okay, I like it. Well, you're enemies of the republic, you're enemies of humanity, and you will be defeated. You understand? You will be defeated. You understand that? We aren't going to stop, and we aren't going to back off, and we aren't going to quit. We've been right about everything. And a lot of you are laughing. A lot of you will be crying later. You're still living at mommy's house, you're still in the military, or do you still think everything's okay? You're going to find out. You're going to find out it's not funny. Evil's not funny. Wickedness and torture isn't funny. it's going to come back on you 10 times what you dealt out. All right, for the balance of this hour, we're joined by Mr. Pound, Greg Pound. And Greg, recap in about 3 or 4 minutes what happened to you, what's happening in Florida, and then this latest case. And I know you follow this. Every day I read about foster children found starving to death or dead in cages, because that's normal standard. They put them in cages, I'd say about a third of the time. They starve them to death. They don't feed them. They're drowning every day. They don't have to follow any rules. They have swimming pools, the foster things. The kid's drowning, not even a fence around it. CPS won't enforce against their own foster kids, foster parents, because they want to cover it up. Then there's the facilities that are even worse, where all the pedophiles go and work. And just nothing happens when all this goes on. And then now I played last week a clip of the head of foster care in an Oklahoma area going, children will die. So what? Yeah, they'll die. They're 5 times more likely to die in their custody. Justice Department's own numbers. And there's a new case here. A boy in foster care is severely brain damaged. And in most news reports, they never mention, but every time I hear about a kid in a cage or a kid starving, I'll hear the media announce, again, 99% of the time, oh, see, foster care needs more funding. CPS needs more funding. Family services need more funding. And then you go dig deeper into the other stories about it, you'll always find it's foster care. It's the government. So they hurt the children, then advertise that it's parents, and then get more money. There's no end to their wickedness. Greg Pound, tell us all about it.
Well, Alex, thank you for having me on again. I want to, what it is that I have our pastor on this program here. I have him on the other phone now. His name is B.B. Bent. He's got a degree in law and government. His father for 30 years was with the CIA. His son-in-law is over the embassy, the American embassy in Baghdad. His son is in the intelligence Marine Corps. And what happens is the reason I have him is because I want him to help explain. He's been a part of the service of civil government and the service of America.
Okay, I didn't know he was on today. Tell me his name again.
B.B. Bent.
And B.B. Bent.
Yeah, and he's also in law school in London.
Okay, that's fine. Tell me exactly. I mean, let's get into the current story you said you wanted to come on about.
Bro, see, the current story is simple that I heard your program here a week ago, and you were talking about, you had someone on there that you were interviewing who said to you that children are going to die, and you were pounding them out about the issue, and then the next day in the paper comes out the issue of this child that was only a year and a half old, taken from the parents, stuck in foster care. The foster parents told him, listen, we need help. We've got too many kids. They're grabbing so many kids. They're sticking them in the foster care places. The people can't deal with it. They told them to come and get the these two children that they dropped off, said, listen, we can't deal with them. We need you to take these kids. And they never came out. They left them in the one, and they shook the child until the child was brain
dead. Yeah, they murder children just 24/7. Then nothing stops them, and now they go. John, pull that clip up where the head of CPS says children will die, just the way it is.
That's exactly right. That was the clip that I heard. And so what happens is our case manager who stole our kids illegally. Now B.B. Bent has a degree in law and government. And our whole church, Alex, we could never deal with the hell that the CPI, Child Protection Investigations, what they're doing to Florida, what they did to our family, trying to break us down. We're in Pinellas County where Terry Schiavo was starved to death. And these people they think they can do whatever they want.
So is B.B. Bent fighting this?
Oh, yeah. It's the whole church. Our whole congregation has supported us through this. And once you hear him talk and explain to you, I mean, and his whole family's involved.
Okay, well, I'm going to hold you over a little bit in the next hour, if you can do it, since we got you on late. And call Jesse Trinidad. Tell him I'm going to get him on 15 after, John. Okay, here is the clip. We're only going to play part of this. I can't stand listening to it. They snatched the lady's child for some dirty plates. We've contacted her and others. That's why they were taken. The little girl's taken for dirty plates in the house. They tricked their way in. Any dog hair, anything, they're gone. And they take them to these filth pits where they're killed. Here it is.
Children will die, whether they're in foster care or whether they're in their own relatives' care. Children will die.
Strong words from DHS after the deaths of two children. Thanks for choosing Eyewitness News 5 at 5. I'm Maggie Carlo.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jessica Schambach. 2-year-old Skydawn Ward died Sunday. Tonight, her death and the death of another child over the weekend are raising questions about how DHS keeps kids safe while they're in foster care.
And Eyewitness News 5's Amanda Guerra joins us now. And Amanda, you you talked to DHS today, and what they told you, downright shocking.
Yeah, it was shocking because the DHS spokesman, like you heard, told me children will die, no matter if it's in their own home or in foster care.
She was just beautiful. I mean,
2-year-old Sky Dawn Word drowned at this foster home in Chickasha Sunday. It's not the only foster care death over the weekend. In Ardmore, 19-month-old Ray Palmer died when a car backed over him. Plus, DHS now faces a lawsuit from a Tulsa family. They claim this foster parent, William Hunter Jr., inappropriately touched his foster son. So today we went to DHS to ask them what they think about these recent cases.
So, do you think something different will have to happen now?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Because children will die, whether they're in foster care or whether they're in their own relatives.
All right, that's enough of that punk. So the point is, they can kill your children 5 times more likely than any other group. Most dangerous place to be. They can kill your children all day long, and there's no investigation, no changes. They're above the law. They are God incarnate. The death will continue. This was only one Oklahoma town. I mean, just deaths every day in Austin, deaths everywhere. The murder spree continues. The child molesters want a child. They go become foster parents, and then the CPS will not investigate because they will not investigate themselves. So the smart pedophiles don't stand outside schoolyards. They become foster parents, and the raping operation begins. Now, again, I'm running on here. B.B. Bent, you're welcome to comment.
Go ahead, Bruce. Bruce? I'm just sharing dead airspace.
No, you're here. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, Greg. I think, Alex? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Sorry, sir. I was just hearing dead air. I lost the
You're on
signal.
Air right now. Go ahead, Mr. Bent.
I want to let you, your listeners know the things that you've been telling people about what's going on around the country are dead on. They're not just happening here in Florida, but it is the program, a federal program, and the monies that are allotted to the states are dependent upon their participation in the program. We have documentation to show that the not only are the federal agencies of the executive department involved, but because of that, the state agencies are involved under the same guise, and that the courts are involved by contract as collection agencies for these agencies. They actually have signed contracts between the judges and the agencies as collection servants for that. The other thing that you mentioned that was so right on is the fact that the majority of this is coming to us not by our elected officials through the Congress. This has been suspended since 1933, our under emergency powers. All of these things have been stopped. Most of our law now comes from executive order, not from our legislature.
And the family services, I even have a mainstream media clip today about it from mainstream television. It was set up for eugenics, and they would sterilize the poor children. That's where CPS was founded. Go ahead.
And you're absolutely right. That those things are very, very much a present part of everyday reality for so many thousands of families now across the country. And a lot of it is, as you said, in Florida specifically, because that's where we live and what we're dealing with every day, these things are done without the benefit of trial. They're done behind the closed doors of a judge's chambers in a judge who is appointed over that specific area of law, and who hears the cases and makes the decisions as rubber stamping the agency what this brought.
Children have less rights than Taliban at Camp X-Ray.
You're absolutely right. You know, there are so many things that, and the thing of it is it's done under the idea that they're protecting child's rights. But in reality, it's the destruction of the family. It's not the protection. It's not the support of the parents in protecting the home and so forth, which is supposed to be, and is said legislative to be the intent of the department, is to protect and hold the family together. And that the only time that the children are to be taken from the family is if, in fact, a crime has been committed.
And the probable cause statute in the state of Florida for a hearing for taking custody of children is based upon the fact that there has to be the probable cause standard for an arrest warrant.
But all of that is ignored system-wide in a racketeering conspiracy for federal funds on headhunting. There are bounties on all your children. These are commanded by pedophile rings. It's been in the Florida news that every director of the CPS, but for the last 6 years, it turns out, is a pedophile. Don't believe me? Check it out. What would a sleigh dog do up in the North Country in northern Canada that was tied up outside in the morning in its doghouse and a grizzly bear or a polar bear came walking in? He'd bark. And I try to control myself. I want the listeners to know when I start frothing on the subject, because it really upsets me, it threatens me at a base level, hurts my spirit. Because I know, I've seen it. I've been there when they're snatching the babies for no reason. I've seen the people crying. I've seen the pain. I've seen the pedophile cops. They have special cops they use. Smile with pleasure. Big, fat, Nelly pieces of trash. Maggot suckers, just pit of hell demons. I've seen the CPS people waddling around. They're all the same demons of hell, literal scum, filth, just unimaginable. And everything I'm telling you is true, folks. They're just grabbing over a million children a year with wanton abandon, always advertising the worst cases with parents to demonize parents. It's all part of eugenics. I'm going to hold you guys 15 minutes over the next hour. You were getting B.B. Bent, our guest, Greg Pound, who had his children kidnapped years ago for no reason, because the neighbor's dog bit the child, and they take your child for that. They really hate Christians. Greg Pound, I thought that Pound was coming on about this this local Florida case of the child dying. I mean, it's always the child being brain damaged or children dying. So I think it's important to personalize these stories. But yes, Mr. Bent, getting into how there is no Bill of Rights or Constitution for families and children. Go ahead.
Well, that's the thing, that once these things have been removed, we have no way to safeguard. In Florida, even though our Constitution mandates the right to trial by jury, right to trial by jury is denied. And even though, and our Constitution here is even higher than the federal Constitution, which says that it shall be irrevocable, and in all cases you have the right to trial by jury. But they sequester it into a private audience before a judge who just rubber stamps. With Greg's case particularly, at the shelter hearing, the judge would not allow any testimony to be made on behalf of he or his family. We were there sworn to testify, and the judge would not hear any testimony and said, "I find probable cause," bam, that's the end of it.
And let's be clear. These are police officers posing as officers. These are CPS posing. The judge is posing. They're all illegally, in a money deal, sworn agents of the private adoption agencies and the government getting these bonuses. So, again, it's just a totally rogue criminal group.
Absolutely true. When we think about the fact that these individuals, and most of them, and I don't know that they're all malevolent in themselves from the beginning, but a lot of them go into these things with good intentions, and then they realize that their job is dependent upon getting more clients. If they want to get promoted, they've got to get a supervisor position. They've got to get people working under them.
Now let me stop you again.
I've
got the statistics. You can pull these up. About 55% of CPS workers. It has the worst government rollover of any industry, of any sector of government. 50% quit because they're the good people who won't go within 1 year. So they have the highest turnover, and then all you get left with is mercenaries that just want the money and pedophiles that want to rape the children. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. You're left with people who are doing it because that's how they make their living. And this is not serving families. This is not holding families together. It's destroying families right and left.
It's armed pedophile mercenary forces ruling.
That's exactly right, and there's no way to guard against it without a return to the fact of holding people accountability to their oath, that these people are supposed to be sworn servants of the people who who are there to do only those things which they're allowed to do under the Constitution, the powers that we grant to them.
Yeah, stay there. Back in 70 seconds. Look, I've got two mainstream news clips I saw last night where they're having to pay eugenics reparations out of Health and Human Services.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Study Health and Human Services. It was set up in England about 120 years ago, brought to the United States in 1900. By 1934, it was law in 30-plus states that if you made below an A-plus or A-minus, depending on the state, they would take you and castrate you. They wouldn't just cut your tubes. I mean, there's hundreds of news reports on this. 500,000-plus women just in the 80s. It was supposedly stopped in 87. 500,000 women just in the 80s were sterilized by Health and Human Services at the state level under federal grants. Millions. The records were destroyed by the federal government from the 30s and 40s, and Hitler made it look bad. And I've got the state testifying here that, yeah, we put two-thirds of the kids on drugs because they got bad gene pools. See, they're killing the evil. They're eugenicists. They're just people that want to steal children for the money, mercenaries. You know, I mean, you see them, they're driving around in Lexuses and living in $400,000 houses. They get bonuses. Some of these CPS workers are making $500,000 a year, but it's the private adoption agencies that are really raking in the cash. The judges, it's just pure evil, folks. It's always the same with these folks, the way they look, the way they act. It's a class of people. Then you have the pedophiles, and then you have a lot of mentally ill people whose parents beat them, and they're out hating parents, hating families. They're eugenicists. They're on a power trip. So you also have mentally ill people. That's the three groups. And that's it. That's all there is in it. B.B. Bent, we're going to get back to you here in just a minute. I wanted to play part one. We'll play part two after we talk to Bent and Pound and others. But here's part one where they're announcing on a newscast last night, oh, hey, the government's going to pay out money to those sterilized. Here it is.
The committee will ask the legislature to enact their recommendations come July of next year. The final draft will be approved December 18th, and from there it will go before lawmakers. If you or anyone you know may have been a victim of the eugenics sterilization program, you can contact the Department of Health and Human Services at 800-662-7030. More information on the eugenics sterilization program can be found on our website, news14.com.
Let's go ahead and play part two and then come back to Mr. Pound and Mr. Bent. I didn't know we were going to have Mr. Bent on. Sounds interesting fellow. I'd like to have him back on about due process another time. But we'll talk to him coming up in the next segment until the 20 after. But here's part two with the poor folks that had their testicles cut off.
29 until 1974, about 7,600 women, men, and children were robbed of the chance to reproduce.
By the way, hit pause.
Then Department.
By the way, back it up. That was just in their county. This is just one little local newscast. They're murdering your children right now. Okay, it's in mainstream news. They take them and give them pesticide till they die in drug test. I mean, these people, the evil level. Oh, source on that, New York Daily News. Keep rolling it.
Were robbed of the chance to reproduce under the then Department of Welfare, our modern-day social services.
They used a fancy name, eugenics, but it was sterilizing. And they use such things as excuses that they were promiscuous, or either that they were feeble-minded, or either that they would not be a contributing member in a positive way to the society of North Carolina.
Representative Larry Womble heads a committee reviewing government compensation for victims of the eugenics sterilization program.
North Carolina used the ones who were on the welfare rolls. And as a result of you being on welfare rolls, if you had a child, then they would come and threaten to take your benefits away from you if you did not participate in the state's sterilization program.
And so many people agreed, but the majority were not willing. 75-year-old Willis Lynch was one of them. He had the procedure at 14.
Well, I didn't know what was going on.
In many families, the bloodline has stopped. There are no more people that can be born in that family.
Okay, so now they target Christians and homeschoolers. And they say, you have degenerate pedophiles kidnap you, no due process, and then most of the time they end up murdering your children.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We're going to go live in about 15 minutes at PrisonPlanet.tv with Jesse Trinity, part two of that interview from last week. Live. Again, ladies and gentlemen, this is eugenics, and it's a minority of children that end up dying. A huge percentage end up being maimed. Over two-thirds put on deadly toxic drugs. On average, seven drugs in Texas. WOAI investigation 2 years ago. Seven drugs on average. Totally healthy. And the majority of the kids end up dying that they get. Majority don't end up dying. A minority end up dying. But the majority that do end up dying, to be precise, for some reason, are black or they're Christian homeschooling whites. They leave a lot of the Mexicans alone because Mexicans are real human beings. They haven't been dehumanized and turned into American slaves. They will run with their children. Their children come first, so I salute them. And I've seen all the statistics. Look, B.B. Bent, Mr. Pound, see, I go off on a jag here because this subject, you know, people ask why I get so mad at the police and the whole system. I'm not saying all police, the whole government's bad. They don't stop it. Where are the police protesting? Where are they saying no? They don't want to be involved in all this. Where are they? The system is evil, and I've had enough of it. Go ahead, B.B. Bent and Greg Pound. You guys talk about whatever you want for the balance of this segment.
Alex, you're absolutely right. The thing that if we've got to have people who will take a stand and say, you know, when I become a government servant, I take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. It's not just the Supreme Court. It's every person who goes into government at whatever level, not just federal government, but any person who goes into government at whatever level has an obligation to uphold and defend the Constitution. That means they're not to exceed their authority. That means they're not to go into areas where powers have not been granted. That means that they're not supposed to do these things for money. They're supposed to be representatives of the people and have no power greater than the individual. Our Constitution, the state of Florida, opens up by saying all political power is inherent in the people. That means anybody in government does not have any greater power than any private citizen because they can't have power that we didn't give them.
But by force of arms, they carry the day, and by false authority.
But it's only because we've been dumbed down to think that we don't have the right to keep and bear arms. We not only have the right, we have the responsibility to see to it that we uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign or domestic. And this means that's where our protection is for limited government. But even further than that, it doesn't mean we're lawless. It doesn't mean we're to go into anarchy. It means just the other way around, that the people were supreme, the people were sovereign, and that below, once we had, as you brought out,
they're going to hold their government responsible, or they are going to abolish it and create new forms. And it is our responsibility. And again, I'll say to everybody in the CIA, the FBI, police, bureaucrats, all of you, you know this stuff's going on. You know I'm telling the truth. You know, so let me tell you something. You either join us in, just like George Bush said, but it's actually true. It's just that he was the terrorist, so it was a reverse double entendre. The point is, you either join us and actively fight this, or you are giving sanction to all of it. And I beg you to search your heart and to join us in the fight against the New World Order. Go ahead.
Thank you, Alex, man. That needs to be said over and over and over again to so many people because a lot of people feel like they don't have the ability to stand up. They don't have the ability to be counted. And every one of us every day makes choices that have to do with that. And if you don't stand up and be counted, then you're one of them. And the they that we talk about is me for everybody but me. And so I have to realize that I have to hold myself accountable every day, and everybody else who works in a position where we are the sovereigns in this country, or we're under tyranny. If there is no other choice.
So tell us some of the horror stories that are going on there in Florida and some of the latest deaths and injuries.
One of the things, you know, and Greg has brought out the fact, and you've brought out the fact already, that his family, he lost four children he and his wife in. That's been more than 4 years ago.
And the CPS worker that did it lost her job, but they won't give the children back because they say, oh, we can't hurt the families that have your children now. What about the biological parents? And the children were old when they got grabbed.
Absolutely. And the thing of it is, and this woman who just recently, this is a grandmother that you opened up the program with. This is a grandmother who wanted to take care of the kids, even though her grandchildren, even though there were problems within the family. The whole idea of the agency was set up to support the family in holding themselves together, to make the necessary food and medical care.
But they didn't. Instead of grandma getting the children, who got them?
The state got them. And now that child is in a vegetative state, not because of the grandmother, not because of any abuse, because of the abuse brought upon by the state. And this has been one case right after another. They take children and they say that these children are underweight, but the standard that they use to measure against, the American Medical Association has already mentioned, is based on obesity. They say these children are underweight. These kids were raised on health food. These kids were raised.
Yeah, that's
by
the new thing. They're grabbing organic folks, children. I've seen that hundreds of times. And these are healthy, radiant-eyed children. And they say if the child isn't obese, then they've got to take them. But then they reverse that. They're also taking children now who are obese. So they're, again, no reason. They just take them.
And that's because there's no standard. Child abuse, abandonment, and neglect under Chapter 39 in the Florida statutes, under the DCF department statutes, is the fact that there's no definition. It's not, they're not holding to the criminal standard for abuse, abandonment, neglect. They go with a standard that is totally nebulous, from letting your children watch too much children to not letting them watch children, from you picking their friends to not.
And where is they hold and where is they hold parents to this maximum standard of a dirty plate, a neighbor dog bite, falling off the jungle gym with witnesses? Well, it's your fault they fell off. It's not normal for kids to have that happen, even though it happened to all of us. We're taking them. Then when they kill or abuse the children, they won't investigate themselves and say, well, their deaths are just part of what we do.
Yeah, and that's the problem, because most of our laws now exempt government from the very standards that they hold the people to. If you look at building code statutes and other ones, you'll walk in there and look at the exemptions, you'll find that the agency has exempted themselves from the same standard.
Government is now God, and this is a perfect atmosphere for the worst elements to then migrate into government and perfect a tyranny, which is now happening.
That's exactly right. Our founding fathers did not hold this. They held our government accountable to a higher standard, the law of nature and of nature's God, and they said, that's why when America had our revolution, it wasn't like the French Revolution, we had an absolute law on which we could hold people accountable, and we held ourselves accountable, and we held the king accountable. We separated from the king of England because he was no longer obedient to those laws. And it's come to a point where King George and King Bill and the others have done the same thing. We're no longer holding them accountable to a higher law. It says once you violate those standards, you start abusing the family, you start redefining family, you start taking and splitting people up and so forth. That's where they're supposed to honor the proper authority of father and mother and hold the family together. Hold marriage sacred. Hold these things that we held accountable. And that's why we had our inalienable rights didn't come from nowhere. They came from the Almighty. And we knew what those rights were because he defined them in his law.
Absolutely. But bottom line here is they set up for eugenics in the 20s, in the 1890s in England, 1920s here, a little bit earlier. And I have the newsreels where they would kill the babies. They'd come, take your baby and kill it. You know, let it die. They just they'd set it out for a few days in a freezing cold room. That's what America does. And so that's who founded CPS, as you just heard the local newscast earlier. And so it's all going on right now. They are not the moral authority. They don't follow the Bill of Rights Constitution. The Guantanamo Bay people have more rights than they do. I'd love to have you back on sometime, B.B. Bent, when I know. I didn't know you were coming on today, but I'm glad Greg Pound had you on with him. In closing, give out your website, Greg, tell folks, because you spend all your time studying this, literally the magnitude of the death and destruction we're dealing with.
Okay, Alex, it's freeourkids.com.
freeourkids.com. It's real simple, freeourkids.com. My phone number's on there. I'm back in the appeals court, and in January, the appeal court's going to hear the case again. This is 4 years. I'm asking your listeners that pray, please pray that we get our kids back. We haven't done anything. We don't smoke, drink, do drugs. We've never abused our kids. We want our children back.
And the neighbor,
our children. We haven't done anything.
The neighbor dog bit one of them, and it's all over.
We want our children back. We haven't done anything. Our court won't even give us a hearing. We can't even present evidence in the courtroom. We can't get our trial by jury. And these people won't give us our kids back. And we want our
babies
back.
Well, I also ask, and if people don't believe in this, it's because they're foolish, the preparatory prayers. And, folks, I'm not somebody who runs around thumping the Bible. I believe it, and I know it to be true, and I've seen it work. And if it's what God wants, I just pray God start, not us. I don't want us to do any violence to it. I just pray God gets these people right. Whatever it takes for these CPS workers, these CPS directors, these people over Health and Human Services at the state level, I pray God give them seven times what they've done now. In fact, I'm just asking the creator of the universe to destroy this trash and to bring them down. I mean, if they'll repent right now, then that's the case. And I know it's real. Obviously, these people are getting wiped out everywhere, car wrecks, cancer, everything else. I just pray that God strike these devils down right now.
I say amen to that.
Absolutely. Look, God bless you both, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. I'm going to come back with Jesse Trinidad. You know, that's all we do on this show. We had a guest on yesterday fighting aspartame, killing millions. We had another guest on fighting GMO, guest on fighting for other people's having their children taken, guest on exposing murders. That's all we do here is expose the evil and try to get the people motivated and moving against this corruption. That's all we do is try to enlighten and inform the public. The whole show yesterday was about the history of the militias, the armed citizens, the founding fathers, what this country was born out of. That is the solution. And you know what? I do believe in divine providence. And the 50 million abortions we've had, all of it. If the people will stand up and ask God to use them as vessels against evil, God will use you. And if you hit your knees and repent, you will be forgiven as well. We'll be right back. All right, it's an important historical event, the federal government bombing the Alfred P. Murrah Building in 1995 on April 19th to demonize militias, patriot groups, and to launch a nationwide move for gun confiscation to set up anti-terror forces against the American people. Here is the Financial Times of London today, and now for a world government. And they admit that a world government is being set up, that it will be anti-democratic and will enslave us. And even mentions how they need to get the American people's guns, how our guns are a problem. Open announcement for world government. Open announcement. They're worried about the people in the heart of America and their guns. They admit here they're setting up world government. It's just all right there. And you can go read that story. We have it linked up on PrisonPlanet.com. We have the FBI documents. Thanks to Jesse Trinidad investigating his brother's murder, a high-powered lawyer. Out of Utah, Salt Lake City, Tribune and others have covered it. The Desert News has covered it. And they've gotten other documents that the Deputy Attorney General Holder, who's about to be the Attorney General, involved in emails and the cover-up of all of this that he got during his lawsuit. He's now won that suit. I think that's the one thing we neglected to mention in the article we wrote. He's got a huge reward out right now for $250,000. They just won over $1 million in the case dealing with the murder by the feds of his brother. So we're going to recap this and then get into more detail on every front and take your calls next hour on the false flag attack of Oklahoma City. We have to continue to revisit all this as new developments come out. So Jesse Trinidad, a short segment now, long segment coming up, but it's good to have you back with us. And why don't you recap the basic facts?
Well, thank you for having me back, Mr. Jones.
You bet.
Basically, my brother was killed in the months following the Oklahoma City bombing. He was killed in Oklahoma City. He had been picked up in California and sent to Oklahoma City. He'd gotten out of service during the Vietnam War as a heroin addict, and that wasn't uncommon back then. He had robbed a bank, and he was caught, and he pled guilty. He did his time. He got out in 1988, married, worked, paid his taxes. He got into a dispute with his probation officer who didn't like him drinking beer, and so we fought that, and he lost that fight. And he just basically told his probation officer, you know where I am, and I'm going to drink beer, so come and get me if you want to. Well, they're not going to go pick somebody up who's drinking beer and send them back to prison. But he was picked up coming across the border. His wife is an American citizen, but they have family in Mexico, in Baja California, and sent to Oklahoma City and was dead 2 days later. And at the time, it was a shock to us. The government called up the Department of Justice and said he'd committed suicide, and they asked for permission to cremate his body, and we said no. And we found out later that after we said no, the Department of Justice went to the Oklahoma State Medical Examiner and tried to get an order for cremation, and he wouldn't give it to him because he didn't have the family's permission. It took us a week to get his body released and sent home, and when he came home, he was heavily made up, and my mother and his wife and my sister stripped the makeup off, and he had been beaten head to toe. His head was, the skin in his head was split to the skull in three places from the blows. Soles of his feet had been beaten, knuckles black, beaten back and front, and his throat was cut. And then we found out he'd been strangled with a pair of plastic handcuffs, so he'd apparently been tortured extensively and then killed. We had no, and this happened in federal custody, supposedly in a isolation interrogation type cell where only the Department of Justice has access to him. And they, of course, said it's a suicide and a suicide by hanging. It was a hard case for us. I mean, we went to our government expecting them to do right. We went to the FBI expecting them to do right. But then we started to get suspicious when all the evidence disappeared. The medical examiner shows up on the morning to claim my brother's body. And before they turn his body over, the Department of Justice removes his bloodstained clothing and destroys it. The medical examiner tries to get access to the cell. They tell him he can't, and then they clean it that very day. He comes back. He finally got into the cell about 6 months later, and they point to a note written on the wall. Now, this is a sealed crime scene, supposedly. And they said, that's a suicide note. And he said, well, why don't you have the handwriting analyzed? He comes back a week later, and they painted the cell. The surveillance camera supposedly malfunctioned. I receive a call from a world expert on video cameras who had been the expert. His name was Pearl, who had been the expert in the Rodney King case. He said the Department of Justice, the FBI, came to him with the video camera and wanted him to say that the camera had malfunctioned. He looked at the camera, he looked at the tape, and he said the tape had been erased. And they immediately grab the camera back from him, the tape back from him, and tell him not to do anything, not to write a report.
All right, stay there. We're going to come back on the other side of this break and continue what Jesse's trying to do. This blew the case wide open. This exposed the feds.
Well, the unions are big businessmen, and they're going out like a dinosaur.
Decades ago, Bob Dylan knew about the New World Order. And I have that direct. Won't say how I know that. Everybody's waking up to the New World Order. They better. Democracy don't rule the world. You better get that through your head. This world is ruled by violence.
This world is ruled by violence. But I guess that's better left unsaid.
From the Broadway to the Milky Way. That's a lot of real estate indeed. Who knows about the New World Order, huh? A man's going to do what a man's got to do. And they put us up against the wall. They put our back up against the wall, and we have to fight back, and so we are. And this is another case, just like all the guests I had on yesterday, of a single person taking action. They harassed his mother, his father, who were elderly, basically caused them to die, as he said last week, Jesse Trinidad, finding out they'd murdered his brother. We're putting photos, autopsy photos, up on screen that are so grisly. So if you're watching PrisonPlanet.tv, turn away if you don't want to see this. Go ahead and put some of them up on screen. I mean, just savagely caved his head in, what looks like burn marks, electrical marks all over him, bruises, I mean, black and blue, head to toe, both sides, savagely just tortured him to death trying to get info because the feds, of course, had just bombed their own building and thought he was one of the witnesses and had to get rid of John Doe number two. But he wasn't John Doe number two. We know who that was. They also murdered him. Police officers that were investigating this in Oklahoma were murdered. Cop of the year, tortured to death, similar to this. Just remember that police out there. They got FBI hit teams that will torture you to death. They'll kill anybody they want, whenever they want. They hire these former special forces guys that are mentally ill, put them into the anti-terror squads, and they like it. They like being the bad guys. They like getting away with it. They like that nobody can stop them. They love evil. It's all about their own personal power. Now, there's more of us than them, and we're going to combine forces. There's good people in government, like good FBI agents leaked documents that he later sued and was able to get from the government because he had the documents to prove were accurate, where they were basically running the bombing operation. This is key info. Let's continue with Jesse Trinidad, who, again, took action and finally won in court. What was it, $1.3 million or $1.2
million? A little over a million, Mr. Jones, but to get right to the heart of the story, and it's interesting that your comments about the murders, because the world-famous videographer, he calls me and tells me the tape had been erased. The FBI had taken the tape back from him and told him not to say anything about it. Before our trial, he ends up dead. A witness to my brother's murder named Alden Gillis Baker, he's found hanging in his cell a month before the trial's to start in federal custody. The fellow that I think was John Doe 2, Richard Lee Guthrie, as you said, he supposedly hangs himself in federal custody the day before he's supposedly going to give a tell-all interview to the Los Angeles Times about what he said would blow the lid off the Oklahoma City bombing. But the point on all this evidence disappearing is we didn't understand why. My brother, we're just ordinary people. Why this is happening? And we'd gone to the FBI looking for them to do the right thing. And the crime scene photographs disappear while in FBI custody. The logbooks that would have shown who came and had access to my brother, they disappear. Everything disappeared. We didn't have a motive. The government harassed my mother and father. They would go up and down the street, and this is the FBI, door to door, asking neighbors for any kind of smut on my family, of drug use, criminal activity, everything. They tried.
And by the way, you now have the emails where Holder, who's about to be Attorney General, is saying this is a Normandy-level cover-up, like the invasion of Normandy on D-Day. So they're just everywhere, full-court press covering this up.
And I don't understand why. I mean, at that time, they tried twice to indict me. My wife, part of my brother's ashes, they had a place together on the beach in Mexico. She had my brother was killed. Their only child was 2 months old. She would go back and forth down to their place on the beach. And coming back across the border one time, immigration officer pulled her over and said, "Are you Mrs. Trinidad?" And she said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, you shouldn't go down to Mexico very much anymore." And she says, "Why?" He said, "The FBI has been here, and they told us every time you come across to take you to what they call secondary. Now, that's where they take the engine out of your car, take the tires off, take the steering wheel out, the seats out, and say, have a nice day, and walk away." But again, we never understood why this was happening, because all we wanted to know was the truth, what happened to my brother, and why nobody was being prosecuted. Well, then it started to unravel about a short time afterwards when I received an anonymous call. I think it was in January of 96. The person said, "Your brother had been killed by the FBI. I remember the words vividly. It was an interrogation that went bad. And the person said, "Your brother had fit a profile of this group that was robbing banks to get money to attack the federal government." And I didn't pay any attention to it. I thought it was a nut calling. And then in June or July of 1996, I read a story in the Los Angeles Times about a Richard Lee Guthrie, who was a member of a group called the Midwest Bank Robbery Gang, who was robbing banks and getting money to wage war against the United States government. And I thought that was interesting, but it never clicked, really. And then about shortly before he was executed, I get a message from Tim McVeigh, who said, told me that when I saw your brother's picture and heard what happened to him, I want you to know that the FBI killed him because they thought he was Richard Lee Guthrie. And I guess what's really clued me into it was getting a telephone call from a reporter named J.D. Cash out of Oklahoma. And J.D. had family and friends killed in a bombing. He had pursued that story all those years. This was in the spring, I think, of 2004. And he asked me if I had a minute to talk about my brother, and I said, yes. And he said, well, describe your brother. And I said, he was 5'9", powerful upper body build, dark complected. J.D. asked me, where was he when he was picked up? And I said, well, he was coming back across the border from Mexico. And J.D. said, well, what was he driving? And I said, he was driving his friend's 1986 Chevrolet pickup truck. And then J.D. asked the last question. He said, did he have any tattoos? And I said, yes. He said, what kind and where? And I said, he had a dragon tattoo on his left forearm. J.D. lets out the sound. I mean, I can't remember what it was. It was like, oh, my God. He said, you better sit down. I said, well, I am sitting down. He said, let me tell you this. He said, when your brother was picked up, the largest manhunt in American history was going on for John Doe 2. And this is the description. White male, 5'9", dark complected, powerful upper body build, believed to be in Canada or Mexico, driving a mid-1980s Chevrolet pickup truck, dragon tattoo, left forearm. My brother comes across the border meeting that description and is sent to Oklahoma and dead 2 days later. And then I brought a lawsuit. I had been leaked two teletypes from then FBI Director Louis Free talking about this sting operation taking place at a white supremacist compound in eastern Oklahoma called Elohim City. And it was apparent from that teletype that they had informants with these people and they were linked to the bombing. And then I came across a reference to an FBI operation that started in the early 1990s, 92, 93, somewhere around there, called PATCON, P-A-T-C-O-N. It was an acronym for Patriot Conspiracy. And apparently it was the FBI's operation to infiltrate the militia movement and to track them all over the country. And so I filed a Freedom of Information Act request. I zeroed in on that sting operation at Elohim City. I said, I want all your documents linking that operation, referring in that operation to the bombing of Oklahoma City, Tim McVeigh, Richard Lee Guthrie, and the Midwest Bank Robbery Gang. Well, I knew that they would lie, and of course they did, and they came back and said there were no documents. And so I filed the two I had with the court, and I knew they'd come back. And one of the things when you fight the FBI, you can always count on them to lie. They'll lie when the truth would serve them better. And that's a big advantage to have, knowing that about your adversary. So I had ready an affidavit from a retired FBI agent saying that the documents were legitimate. So they, sure enough, they come back into court and say the memos are fake. I file that. The judge goes ballistic, orders them to go back and do a manual search. And they come back with 150-some pages of records. And they plead with the judge not to turn them over to me because they said they had four or five informants who they had promised anonymity, and if their names were to get out, they would be placed at risk. The judge said, black the names out, turn the documents over. Well, I get these blacked out, I get the documents with the names blacked out, but it's clear they had this operation up and running. One of the teletypes has Tim McVeigh calling Elohim City 2 days before the bombing, asking for more help. Evidence came out that one of the informants had actually gone 4 months in October 94 to scout the Murrow Building with some of the participants and had reported it. So they knew at least four months before it happened it was going to happen. They had their informants robbing banks and armored cars with McVeigh and the Midwest bank robbers to get the money to build a bomb.
Now let me stop you there. Going back, because remember, Colonel Craig Roberts and others have talked about how you were able to get the two memos and put them over each other. You had the one that had been leaked, but then you also had the other one that you were able to get from the government, and you were able to learn quite a few of the names from that.
Well, not the names, but what was important is they blacked... they can't remember what they've done in the past, so they black out different parts.
Yeah, I'm going from memory here. So I guess it was the Southern Poverty Law Center government memo where the two copies were obtained and then laid over each other. I'm going back from memory here. Was that the Southern Poverty Law Center government documents that came out that they had basically had people in control or in the command positions there where they got the two memos and they laid them over each other?
These were all FBI documents, but they referred to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center immediately called me and told me they had no involvement in this operation. And all I said was, I don't know if that's true or not, but your name is sure as hell all over these 150 pages of FBI records talking about it in terms of apparently a joint operation. And I know this sounds incredible to your audience, but what they should keep in mind is it's not me saying this. These are records prepared by the FBI.
Are you kidding? The ADL's been caught running all sorts of white supremacist groups. I mean, it's just par for the course, man.
But, I mean, the point is, these were FBI documents, and many of them had been drafted, or at least were sent out under the order of the director of the FBI, Louis Freeh. And so once I get the documents, the oldest one I get is on the afternoon of the bombing, April 19th, 1995. So I go back to the court and I say, look, Your Honor, there's no way in hell this sting operation sprang to life 3 hours after the bombing. It had to have been in place beforehand. And that's when I asked for permission to take the depositions of Terry Nichols and David Hammer. Now, David Hammer, everyone knows Nichols is the co-conspirator of McVeigh. Hammer had spent 2 years on death row with McVeigh, and McVeigh told him all about the bombing, including the FBI's apparent involvement through a ring of informants.
You know, that's a good point. We didn't get into last week about the Nichols deposition you got and how they tried to block that coming out, and how when he wanted to talk to Attorney General Ashcroft, then he put a gag order and blocked the media from getting to him. Perhaps we should flesh out what that meeting was like with Nichols.
Well, I went into, I don't know how I got in, but I got into the new Alcatraz, which is ADMAX, Administrative Maximum Prison in Florence, Colorado. It's basically underground. The people who go in there, like Nichols, will never come out. They'll come out in a body bag. They'll never come out alive. It's concrete, largely underground, no windows. I spent a day and a half with Nichols. He gave me about about 25, 30 page affidavit talking about the bombing, talking about some of the others involved. How I came to see him, though, was apparently Nichols had been convicted by the federal jury. He was tried by the federal government first. They convicted him, but they refused to give him the death penalty because they said it was clear to them that there were others involved, and they didn't understand why the Department of Justice and the FBI weren't going after the others. Nichols is then tried in state court. Same result. Jury convicts him, refuses to give him the death penalty, saying it's clear to us there are other people involved and that the FBI and the state of Oklahoma and the Department of Justice are not going after these people, and we're not going to send Nichols to death and end the story without knowing what all is out there. And so Nichols, once he's convicted in state court, he can't be retried, and he can't be given the death penalty. So he writes to Attorney General Ashcroft, and he says, come and see me, and I'll tell you everything. I'll tell you all the people involved. And Ashcroft not only doesn't go see him, but issues an order that Nichols is to have no contact with the media. And so that's the scene when I finally get in to see Nichols. And so I get this affidavit, and I go back to the court, and that's when the court looked at that affidavit, and the court had unredacted copies of these documents. So when the judge allowed them to turn over copies to me with the names blacked out, he ordered them to turn over copies to him without the blackout. So he knew who was involved. He knew what they were doing. He knew what was planned. And he said, you go take that deposition, and you take it on videotape.
Yeah, that was the documents I was going back to in memory. So what was it like talking to Terry Nichols for the time you spent with him?
He is not a person who professes to be innocent. He's a person, I think, and as I think I may have mentioned to you, to me it's a story of sin, forgiveness, and redemption. He's apparently reached out to some of the victims' families, and two in particular, the two grandmothers who each lost two grandsons, toddlers, in the daycare center, and asked for forgiveness, and they've forgiven him, and they've struck up, I guess, for lack of a better word, a sort of a friendship, and he promised them that he would tell everything, and he would clear his conscience to the extent it can be cleared.
And he did tell you what really happened.
There wasn't enough time to tell it all. That is true. I mean, when I say you're in a day and a half, it's not that long, because part of the time is bringing him to the room where he's interviewed. Part of the time is waiting for them to clear out of the room, because they're not supposed to be listening to it, but you know they are anyway. And then they come back and do their routine checks. So it's constantly disruption. And it's you're in a risk of being searched and everything else when you leave there. So that's not... There's some things that he was afraid to talk about, didn't want to talk about, for fear that they would hear or overhear or find out. But he did say enough that there were, at least he claims, that the FBI was involved, that an FBI informant, according to him, even provided the detonators used in the bomb. But,
well, I'll tell you what, stay there. And then when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with you about what Terry Nichols told you, the affidavit you got out, how this helped you, win in your court case. And then we're going to take calls in the next hour with all the interesting points that listeners will bring up, all the directions they will take us in. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Jesse Trinidou is our guest coming up in the next hour at 1-800-259-9231. We are going to be taking your phone calls for him. You know, they've announced that five people are going to plead guilty who've been in Guantanamo Bay for 6 and 7 years, respectively. Openly being tortured, openly having psychological warfare done, things we can't even mention on air. It's admitted in mainstream news that they do. They have sex with them. They put blood on them. They do satanic rituals. And the Army says they do that to freak them out because they're Muslim. No, it's because the government's satanic. And they like to do this in their spare time. If you don't believe me, just pull it up. I mean, I can't say more than that. It's been in the AP. It's been in Reuters. I mean, hardcore torture. And then they've got black sites or ghost sites where they torture them to death. They've got drugs that stop their hearts, but then they're fully conscious, and then as soon as they panic, it's worse than waterboarding. They then turn their hearts back on. Fox News has reported that and said it's a great thing they're doing. That's in my film, Police State 3, Total Enslavement. So this, you know, torture of people to get confessions from them. I was on the treadmill this morning watching cable, and I was watching Dragnet, and they were the good guys crushing the man's testicles to get the answers. Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd torture the guy by crushing his testicles, and it's so funny. But see, it's not funny in real life when two big guys are knocking your teeth out and putting you on PCP and having prostitutes dance around in devil outfits. I mean, it's just all sorts of things you can't imagine. I mean, I could never have thought of this. I can't even get into it on air, folks. It's too disgusting. Needless to say, if it freaks me out, it really freaks these Muslims out. And so now they've tortured them for 7 years. They've got their... So that's the system we're facing. Jesse Trinidou, continuing, sir, with in that day and a half with Terry Nichols, what you were able to learn, what was in the affidavit that they've tried to quash, and, is that affidavit public? When can it go public? Will it go public?
The affidavit's public record.
Yeah.
Nichols basically said that he was under the impression that the FBI was playing some role in handling Tim McVeigh, and that one of the informants had actually provided the detonators for the bomb. I think it's what's interesting, though, is I've made those accusations in this lawsuit, and the FBI has never denied them. And the accusations were pretty specific, that they were involved possibly with the German government and others in a sting operation to infiltrate the militia groups in this country. It went bad on them. It resulted in the bombing in Oklahoma City.
Well, that's their spin. I mean, 2 weeks ago, German intelligence was caught, Reuters reported, staging bombings on NATO facilities. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they specialize in attacking federal buildings. That's their little favorite. That's the German. The German mark is attacking their... The German signature is they like to attack cops, because then that gets the cops to do whatever they say. And they were caught two Mondays ago, Der Spiegel, Reuters. It was admitted, just cut and dry, NATO police caught him. But specifically, he said that McVeigh told him that, yeah, that he was in black operations.
He inferred from some things McVeigh said that that's what was taking place.
Specifically, what did McVeigh say?
I can't remember now. I haven't looked at it in some time that the FBI had changed the plans or changed the target.
And McVeigh didn't like that?
He didn't like that.
What are the original target been?
Nichols said he didn't know. He didn't know what the target was, but he was under the impression it was going to be done at night in an empty building.
Yeah, let's say this again. The FBI changed the target from an empty building to the federal building.
And changed the time.
So there's your loving FBI blowing up federal buildings. Of course, the FBI and BATF, they weren't at work that day, were they, Jesse?
That's my understanding, they weren't.
Oh, and then they showed up and told the local doctor, showed up on the scene, patch me up, say I'm hurt. And the doctor said no, and what did they say? They said, you die. We'll be right back. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. Jesse Trinidad is our guest, back in 70 seconds with the fourth hour. Jesse Trinidad is our guest. Your calls are coming up. This is a short segment, Jesse. But long segment coming up. Plenty of time to break down everything that's happening and going on. So, specifically, I remember a few years ago when you first broke this here on this show, there were quite a few documents and affidavits and things that were blocked that you couldn't bring out at that time. I'm interested about the chain of events of when the affidavit and the rest of it was finally made public.
Made public in this fight to get basically to what happened is I go to the court with some initial things that Nichols had given me, including documents, a few he'd had, plus his sworn statement. The judge has those, and plus he has the unredacted documents the FBI gave him. And that's when he ordered me, gave me an order, says, you go take that deposition. And of course, the government immediately filed a motion asking him to reconsider and withdraw the order. And it took a year to fight that motion out. I mean, his original order allowing me to take the depositions was handed down in September of 2007. The FBI fought like hell for an entire year. And then in this last September 2008, he denied their motion and said, I told you to go take the deposition. And they now here in the last few days appealed that order to the Court of Appeals. But the point I was going to make before the break to your audience is they've never denied the accusations. I mean, my accusations are you infiltrated this group. You actually ginned these people up to do that bombing. You knew it was going to happen. And whether you wanted it to happen or not, you didn't stop it.
Oh, that's their M.O. I mean, take Ahmad Salam and the 93 World Trade Center. I'm sure you know this story. New York Times, Chicago Tribune, they all. I mean, this is a fact. They hire Ahmad Salam, like Andre Strassmeyer, being German intelligence. They hire Egyptian intelligence, buddies with the U.S. They bring him over. They say, oh, we're just going to bomb an empty building. You're going to build a fake bomb to bust some crazy Muslims. Then they say, now the target's the World Trade Center. We're going to build a real bomb to make it stick in court. And he goes, I don't want to do that. And they say, you want your money? You're under orders. Then he builds the real bomb. They give him real detonators. Then they say, we're going to let him go ahead and bomb the building. He thinks they're setting him up. He records them ordering him to bomb the building. Now, I mean, again, how did the FBI get criminals this evil, Jesse?
Well, I think it's birds of a feather. There are lots of good FBI agents, and they've helped me. I don't know who they are. I receive things from people I don't know who they are.
But the high-level units, they're the bad ones.
They're the bad ones. So you don't rise to the top of the FBI without being basically a crook. In my opinion,
bombing daycare centers, it's more than a crook.
Look, a criminal.
I mean, this is sick. This is sick.
And I don't know if they intended it or not, but they did it. And the point is, I accused them of it, and they never denied it.
Well, they changed the target from an empty building to the federal building.
But the point I was going to say is that they've never denied the accusations. They just pleaded with this judge not to give the documents to me, and he didn't accept that. And then they pleaded with him not to let this deposition go forward, and he didn't accept that. And for those of your audience of my age who remember Watergate didn't come out overnight. Yeah, it came out as a result of a mean-ass federal judge named John Sirica, who held the government's feet to the fire until the story came out. And I think we've got a John Sirica here.
I wonder if he's got his insurance up to date.
It's been a hard fight, and it's far from over. I know a lot of people say, you know, why are you doing it? And I said I never started out to solve the Oklahoma City bombing. I just want justice for my family and the people who killed my brother.
But that's how it works in life, as you know. When you start out wanting justice for yourself, you find out it's connected to everybody else.
Well, this appears to be the case here because everything has taken me to Oklahoma City and the bombing. Every lead, every witness, every piece of destroyed evidence, it all goes back.
How do these FBI guys on the dark side, when you get around them, how do they behave?
Well, they tried twice to indict me. As I said, they've harassed my family. I have my wife go out and start the car in the morning. That's a joke.
Let's talk about where this goes from here and other key points in the case when we get back. Then we're going to open the phones up at 800-259-9231. Our guest is Jesse Trinity. We're very honored to have him with us. I'm going to talk to Jesse right now. Jesse? Jesse?
Yes.
We're not on the AM and FM or shortwave or satellite right now, but we are streaming live over the web. I like to do these little behind-the-scenes things in the fourth hour, and we're also at prisonplanet.tv. I'm kind of conducting the interview here today and all over the map. What are some of the points you want to make sure that we point out? I mean, the website, the reward, where you're going from here. You're not giving up on justice. I mean, what are some of the other points you want to make?
That's basically, I think we haven't gotten into Eric Holder very much. I think, you know, we clearly got Eric Holder. Here's the second in command of the Department of Justice covering this murder of a little person up. And you have to say, why in the hell, like you said, the invasion of Normandy, are they doing this? And I firmly believe Holder played a role. I don't have anything on paper.
Well, you have the FBI email saying he's in command of the operation that's as big as Normandy.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't have anything on paper him covering up the bombing. But I'm sure he was.
You have him covering up the murder of your brother.
Yeah, but I'm sure he was linked. I mean, if he's got his hand in covering up the murder of a citizen, then you know he's got his hand in covering up the murder of 169 citizens.
Yeah, they're hardcore, I know that. This country's in for a lot of trouble. The gun-grabbing Obamas and Holders and Clintons, and they're talking about Al Gore and the administration, they hate America, they hate the Second Amendment, and they are not going to give us any rest. They're probably going to stage, and the problem is they're going to stage more domestic attacks. You notice they've said suddenly, oh, Al-Qaeda isn't going to be striking now. It's going to be blonde-haired, blue-eyed Al-Qaeda. There's thousands. They're about to hit us. We have to have troops on the streets, and they're training every city for roadside bombs, saying there's militia. They're all about to strike. And that's how they're going to get the troops on the streets of America, is they're going to run around killing cops, blowing stuff up, and blaming it on the American people. So they're bringing in Holder, the specialist in all this. Of course, we have the BATF out in New Mexico blowing up Ryder trucks the months before. I mean, we just have these people.
Well, I think that the Clintons certainly were terrified of the militia movement. PACCON started under their watch. And I think there's less chance of getting to the truth about the bombing and anything else if you bring back the Clinton people into this administration.
That's right. We have to expose the last false flag under these people to stop the new ones. And I want the police listening. Well, I'll say it on air. Here we go.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Yeah, I want to tell the FBI and police something. It's wrong the FBI and BATF were all out of the building when the FBI bombed it in 95. And I've been studying the enemy's attack pattern. I believe they're going to bring back the domestic terrorism. They're going to target military and police to get you all hyped up to attack the American people. You see, in Seattle in 99 and Denver this year and Minneapolis-St. Paul this year and in Ottawa this year, the police were caught everywhere this year and, of course, hundreds of times previously. With cops dressed up like anarchists, they run up and attack other police. A lot of times the police don't even know they're being attacked by other cops, and it's real. In the case of Canada this year, for the big global summit, the North American Union summit, they knew it was staged, and it later came out that it was cops. after they attack themselves, they then rubber bullet and attack the peaceful crowd and baby carriages with pepper spray. And we've got videos of the after meeting police, you know, with them going, "Great job routing that scum, men. Did you see me shoot that lady in the face with rubber bullets?" cops, you think it's fun staging terror, provocateur attacks where somebody throws bottles at other cops. How about when the feds blow up your building with you in it? See, this isn't funny. Killing cops isn't funny. I know you think it's cute because when you're killing your own people, it's like a little fun inside goody good. But it's sick. It's degenerate. It's disgusting. When German intelligence got caught 2 weeks ago staging terror attacks against themselves, and they got caught. And you're all going to be caught for all of this. Now, I want to go to your phone calls coming up in the next segment at 1-800-259-9231. The main reason that we've got Jesse Trinidad here is he's won the big case. For a couple months, he's had a $250,000 reward out for evidence leading to the arrest of the people that killed his brother. He won the case, not for murder, but for all sorts of abuse and admitting the government did wrong. That's a big issue right there. And they did torture him to death, obviously, in the jail cell. That's not really being debated. The FBI, as he said, is not denying when he's in court. He's not denying when he puts out affidavits that they made the bomb. They trained the people. McVeigh was Army Black Ops. They were going to bomb an empty warehouse, but instead McVeigh got mad when they changed it to bombing the Murrah building. That's why they probably set him up as the patsy. Said we're going to kill your whole family if you don't go along with this. Here's video of mommy out there taking the trash out. We're going to torture her to death for a long time if you don't play ball. When he was picked up, he was obviously drugged, stumbling around, foaming at the mouth, saying, "I've got a chip in my butt." So no telling what happened there. Jolyon West, the famous mind control doctor from MK Ultra hearings in 77, becomes his doctor until the time he's executed in Terre Haute. So that's some of the basics. But Eric Holder, involved in the cover-up, we have the internal memos, the emails. This is confirmed in the case about how he was running the cover-up of your brother's murder and how this was, quote, as complex as the Normandy invasion. And how they had to have a unified front PR spin. That's all up on Infowars.com. Plug your website with all the documents, photos, the reward, and then let's get into Holder and where you're going from here.
All the documents we've talked about are at the reward site, which is my brother's initials, Kenneth Michael Trinidad, KMT Reward, one word, KMTReward.com. It'll have it all there. And back to Eric Holder, the documents reflect that Holder ran the cover-up of my brother's murder. And Holder was the second in command of the Department of Justice in the Clinton-Reno Justice Department. And you have to ask yourself, what is the second in command of the Department of Justice doing, one, covering up a murder, period, but even being involved in the death of an ordinary citizen? You would never see that. And it didn't make sense at the time, but it does now. And if he knew, and I think he did, that if this murder was solved, it would go to the government's role in the bombing, then he sure would be involved in covering that up, because that would have cost Bill Clinton a re-election in 1996.
Well,
the American people had known about the FBI's role.
Well, we thought we were getting rid of the Clintons with Obama. People thought that. I knew they were running Obama. And here they all come. Al Gore, Hillary Clinton. They're saying Bill Clinton's going to be in the administration. All the same people that ran Waco and Oklahoma. They're just all back, and they want our guns. Please continue.
Well, I can say this, that I agree with you there. And I contributed money to Obama's campaign, and I voted for him. But I didn't vote for him to bring the Clintons back. And with the Clintons coming back into power, the chance of this story ever seeing the light of day, my brother's murder and the bombing, gets slimmer and slimmer.
Well, the whole government stages false flags all the time, so none of them are ever going to let it come out. But you have beat them so far. Where do you go from here?
Well, I think the most important thing, I have three big fights, obviously, to get the men who killed my brother. And the other fight is to get the truth out through Terry Nichols if something doesn't happen to him in the interim. And then I've sued him again. I understand that I've had on pretty good authority that there's a CIA report out there that says that the FBI was involved in Elohim City with the German government in that sting operation, and that the FBI does have a surveillance tape that shows the Ryder truck pulling up in front of the Murrow Building, and the description, the government's description of that tape is the bomb detonates 3 minutes and 6 seconds after the suspects, quote-unquote, exit the truck.
Well, I mean, we have the L.A. Times and everybody, a bunch of people interviewing the FBI agents who saw the tape, and it shows McVeigh and one other guy getting out. And then, of course, they've sequestered that tape, what, through three lawsuits?
Yes, but I've sued them to get it. And you have to ask yourself, and I'll answer the question, too, is that would be the best evidence of the crime, is an actual videotape of the people doing it. And you say, why wouldn't you have shown that as evidence at Nichols' trial and McVeigh's trial? And the obvious answer is one of the people getting out of the truck was, or two of the people getting out of the truck were on your payroll. And that's why you don't want it shown.
Well, they were all on the payroll. McVeigh was on their payroll. Now, he got recruited out of the Army. That was the inside info we always had. Have you ever seen the video of the guy up at the military camp a few months before it, when he's supposedly out of the military, who looks just like McVeigh?
I haven't.
That's pretty powerful. It is McVeigh. There's no doubt about it. Have you seen the camp grouper photos taken by off-duty police flying their Cessna of the at the Army base with the fuel oil tanks, and they're loading a Ryder truck behind security fences with ammonium nitrate?
That one I haven't seen either. I came late to this fight.
Camp grouper, yeah. Oh, I mean, there's so much evidence. It's incredible. I mean, you know about them killing cops and coroners and doctors and witnesses, right?
That I know about, and I think they're fully capable of it.
Yeah,
and that's why I made a joke about starting the car, but I recognized early on that for my own security, anything I did get, I couldn't keep it to myself. I had to get it out into the public, and that's why the minute I get an affidavit from Terry Nichols or I get something, I file it in the court so it's public record.
Well, most of the people doing all this killing, if you profile them, there's different types, but mainly they're former military. They've been in black ops. They've killed families in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Africa. They've seen dead kids everywhere, and they just start liking it. And so, hey, you know, kill 160-something people in a federal building, blow up some kids, collateral damage. But how would they like something happening to them or their family? Oh, then it's all, oh, my goodness, no, nothing can happen to us. And, of course, they got away with Oklahoma City, so why not 9/11? And, they just never stop. It just gets bigger and worse and more out of control. And, I'm not even looking for a fight with these people. I want them to stop killing us and stop destroying our country. But they've got a job to do to bring this nation down. Give me ideas about stopping Eric Holder becoming the Attorney General.
I just think that the I don't know how much good it would do, but I'd have your audience, your listeners, the right call, email your congressmen or senators, and tell them to look into this man's background. I mean, again, it's not me making this up. These are government documents with Holder involved in the cover-up of my brother's murder.
Well, that's probably on his resume. Probably his internal resume says, you know, Oklahoma City bombing, and think, whoa, come on in here. Man, this is good. We got a lot of federal targets for you.
To put in perspective, here today they indicted the five former servicemen for the shootings in Iraq. And I don't know the circumstance. I mean, it takes place in a combat zone. Most of them were former Marines or airborne. I was in the Corps. I know those people, they're well-disciplined, they're trained. They don't fly off the handle and do things like that, in my estimation.
They were ordered.
The point is that they're being prosecuted for, and if they did that, they should be, for what took place in Iraq. You have my brother who's in custody of the FBI in a cell where nobody but the FBI basically has access to him. They have all the evidence, and nobody gets prosecuted. The prosecutions by the federal government are selective.
It's called untouchable.
There's a reason they do it.
Well, look, they just arrested the Illinois governor, who I, by the way, hate. He's a gun grabber. But they just arrested him for what's normal in U.S. politics. You know, hey, I'll give you this appointment if you give me that appointment. And now they've arrested him. Meanwhile, you got Daley mob bossing there in the city. And it's nothing compared to all the other corruption.
Yeah, they selectively prosecute, the federal government does. Crimes committed by themselves against the citizens are not prosecuted. They do it to further their own interests.
It's a mafia with government power.
Well, I've often said that the FBI is a, and again, your audience should know that I have, I hate that institution, but it's not as, I think it's actually worse than the old KGB, because the KGB, they do the same thing, but the KGB never claimed to be a legitimate law enforcement agency, and the FBI does.
Back when you were a Marine, did you have any idea how this country was really run?
No, I was, and when my brother was murdered, I didn't either. I expected the government to do the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, and look at family courts. There's no due process there. They don't follow any law there. The whole country's a giant happy hunting ground for crooks to get into government and have their way with the people. And I, for one, am sick of it. Plus, they're bringing the whole country down now. They've gotten so corrupt, everything's collapsing like a third world nation. Good job, guys. You've destroyed America. Great job. We'll be right back with your phone calls.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones, only on the GCN Radio Network.
Folks, we are back live. I want to talk to John, Cody, Steve, Chris, Tyler, and others from all over the country and the world. Before we go to phone calls with you, sir, Jesse Trinity, other points you haven't covered, other areas that need to be gotten into?
Well, I'd just like to leave the audience with this thought that I didn't, two things, that I didn't start to go to Oklahoma City following my brother's murder took me there. I didn't start out hating my government. I didn't start out distrusting my government. I certainly didn't start out distrusting or hating the FBI. I went to my government. I went to the FBI asking them to do the right thing, to investigate my brother's murder, to prosecute the people who did it, and to punish them. And instead of that, I got lies, I got cover-up, I got harassment, and my government and the FBI tried at least twice to indict me, to shut me up. And they said it for that reason, that the I have the documents, I never sent them to you, but that, where they said the purpose of indicting me was to stop my inquiry, to shut me up. Not that I'd done anything wrong, but just to shut me up.
See, that's what's so crazy, is that they're so corrupt, they'll even put in their own memos that they're committing racketeering crimes. I mean, to put false charges on somebody just to shut down an investigation into the government, that's criminal. But it's such a culture of criminality that it's just right out in the open now.
Well, they said they were doing it because I was on a campaign, and that's their words, campaign to discredit the federal government.
Well, you sociopath psychopaths, you killed his brother. You blew up a building full of little kids. I know you don't care about them. What about the federal officers, your fellow God creatures? I mean, you know, you killed kings. I know us slaves don't matter, but you killed gods. I mean, you know, I guess that doesn't matter, though, when a super god kills a lower god. Unbelievable. Let's take phone calls. John in New Jersey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
It's John Carroll.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, how you doing? I talked with you last week. I'm a cop in Jersey City.
Oh, yes, sir. How you doing? Good to talk to you.
How are you, sir?
Good.
I just had one question to ask Mr. Trinidu, and my condolences to the loss of your brother, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely, and I apologize because it's readily obvious from everything that you're saying that there's ultimately a real big problem there. And as a member of law enforcement, a 9/11 responder, it is my real apology to you that you went through that situation, and I apologize. My question is, Morris Dees, he was the founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, correct?
That's my understanding. Yes, he was.
What is his culpability there? I mean, I've seen a couple of documentaries. I mean, do you find any culpability with regards to his position in that organization? I mean, where does he come from?
All I know is that the Southern Poverty Law Center has told me they're not involved. The FBI documents, on the other hand, say they are involved. I don't have a problem with monitoring hate groups that can do harm to American citizens, but
Absolutely.
But you, as you know from law enforcement, you got to stop them before they do it.
Well, they also mislabel. They like mix Second Amendment groups or property rights groups in with the Ku Klux Klan.
And I think, John, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
You're in local law enforcement.
He's a police detective.
Not in the federal government. Now, if you'd done something wrong, what would the federal government's approach been to you? They jacked the jail up and put you under it.
I mean, in what sense, though?
They pursue local law enforcement people whether they've done anything wrong or not.
Well,
they're constant.
Well, that's part of federalization.
Yes, we are. We definitely are. We're put into a situation, and it sort of is like the movies. You know how they portray the disdain between federal, FBI, DEA, local law enforcement. There is a general disdain because local law enforcement, you know, and it's really not a perception. It really is. It's actually actual. We really are just glorified security guards.
And if my brother had died and had been killed in a county jail or state prison, I think you can safely say the FBI had been all over that, wouldn't they?
Yes, absolutely. I'll give you a quick story.
John. We got a break. Come back a minute or two with you on that. How it works is you got boss hog local corruption, and it's bad. But the feds are the worst, and they come in and they use the indiscretions of locals to take over. And that's how the federalization is happening. The feds have taken over scores of cities. They actually run them. We'll be right back.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Pienso que un sueño parecido no volverá más. Y me pintaba las manos y la cara de azul. Y de provisa el viento rápida me llevó. Y me hizo volar en el cielo infinito.
You got to get over your fear. You got to just commit to what you're doing and deal with it. I respect these enemies. It takes a lot to be able to blow little kids up in America and torture cops to death and do all the things they do. I mean, I don't think I'm safe. I don't think I'm beating them. I'm just saying, look, you people are out of control destroying the country, and I've got to fight you. And, you murdered this guy's brother, and he stood up to you, and he's beating you. They probably aren't going to kill you, though. They've already harassed your family and your parents till they died because now they don't want to draw attention to themselves by killing you. But who knows? They're so reckless now, they might cut your head off and stick it on a pike in front of town. Or on the gates of the city. There is just a flagrance by these people now. But Jesse Trinity, I just want to commend you. Going back to John in New York, a police detective out there, and we can confirm he is. We know who he is. He's had 9/11 Truth into Jersey and New York. Finishing up the point you were making, then I want to get to the other calls.
Absolutely, Alex. Quick story. 9/13/01. What we received was a cross-referenced manifest of obviously Middle Eastern names. That's actually when we had a Constitution back then, before the Patriot Act. So they actually had to manufacture a manifest of people that had, you know, Middle Eastern names, but with very slight what we call scoff law. Parking ticket warrants that they didn't serve, they didn't pay their tickets, very minuscule offenses. And all of a sudden, we were given that manifest to go out and find these people. And I think I was in special investigations at the time, so we were assigned to do that. And we pulled these names. We found, out of 30, we actually located one. We felt like we were doing the right thing at that time. Obviously, in hindsight, it's 2020. Now it seems ridiculous to me that I thought I was doing the right thing. I mean, I'm violating this person's... I mean, we're not really violating the person's rights. I mean, that person would be processed in and out of.
But for a crooked toenail that you were specifically being drawn off of serious cases, put on these petty cases.
Well, that was it was 2 or 3 days right after 9/11. So I mean that was the case. I mean there wasn't the 9/11 was the case. I mean. You were just all over the place.
Well, you know, with the Oklahoma City bombing, and I appreciate your call. It's good to hear from you again. Call back soon. We're going to go to some more calls here in a minute. But what the FBI did is they went and investigated everything. The dog catcher, the butcher, the candlestick maker. They went after everybody to create the biggest mountain up until that point of investigations ever to get their good agents off the real trail and to create just this mountain of garbage. Jesse, what do they call that tactic?
All I know is it's that's part of their tactic all the time. Is when they really want to cover it up, they say, look at our investigation. We interviewed 10,000 witnesses, and we have 100,000 documents. Obfuscation is what they do. In the bombing case, the agent in charge of the case, after he retired, said he was told, the only time in his career, he was told by main justice out of the White House, Clinton Reno Justice Department, not to go after the people at Elohim City.
Yeah. All righty, let's go ahead and talk to Cody in Georgia. You're on the air with our guest. Go ahead, Cody.
Yes, sir. I just had a question. I was wanting to ask if, actually, I had two questions. I was want to ask you, sir, if you were able to subpoena the federal guards, or if they allowed you to do that, or that judge, you seem like a pretty reasonable judge.
Yeah, do you have an idea who killed your brother?
I don't. I don't. See, one of the things under the Freedom of Information Act, you request is you can't subpoena.
Oh.
All you can do is a judge can order them to. I have to focus on Nichols and the documents I asked for. I can't go, even though that's where that road's going to take me. I can't just jump ahead to there. I have to go through the process of fleshing out the bombing, linking Richard Lee Guthrie, who I think my brother was mistaken for, to the bombing, and get there one step at a time. I just can't jump over everything.
Have you ever actually seen pictures of Mr. Guthrie?
I have. They look alike. He and my brother look alike.
Oh, me. I had one more quick question. I was wondering, one of the John Does they had said was Middle Eastern looking, and I was curious if you, Alex, knew anything, if it might have been Mossad involved or something to that effect. I didn't know. One of the John Does was supposed to be.
A lot of people have said there's a Middle Eastern connection. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't.
I can tell you.
But everything I have seen, all the FBI documents talk about homegrown folks and government folks.
They always have covers and fallbacks. They did have Middle Easterners. They were caught at the airports with the blue jogging suits and the bomb-making components. But they weren't involved either. They were only involved in a local cover to throw the media off. The media was doing investigations of them. And some of the people even involved in 9/11 on the outside. So always in a black op, they have multiple trends, multiple patsy lines, multiple angles they can go on. And it was meant to be blamed on the American people and homegrown militias, but they were ready to fall back with the whole Middle Easterner line. As for Israel, you know, Israel has a lot of evidence involved in the Mumbai attacks, so we cover that. In Israel, it's been in their papers that they've admittedly staged al-Qaeda attacks in Israel. That's Haaretz, Jerusalem Post. But then there's this whole crowd who just always says Israel does everything. You know, just everything. No, it's another system run by the same globalist, and they're a very able intelligence group, so they do a lot of this evil. But there are other groups. The British do it. The Germans do it. The Russians have been caught doing it. This is what governments do. It's a very nasty tactic, and only by exposing it and making false flag terror a household name can we finally stop these inside jobs and then all the political hay they get out of it. The truth is, really, nobody's attacking us. There's nothing going on. Everybody's scared of the U.S., so the globalists have to go stage things as a way to oppress their own people or go attack other nations. And we had the former head of Pakistani intelligence on in a huge exclusive in the first hour. If you missed it, folks, it's going to be re-airing in about 20 minutes at Infowars.com, the only place you can hear it right now. It'll be re-airing on AM and FMs across the country as the show rebroadcast. Thank you for the call, sir. Now, let's go to Steve in Illinois. Steve in Illinois, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm curious, what is the strongest evidence you have to link this situation to the German intelligence?
I don't have that yet. That's my understanding. That's what I've sued to get, the CIA report that I've been told exists.
Well, that's separate in the CIA report. We know Andreas Strassmeier's dad was the big top Nazi. We know he's in German intelligence. We know he was allowed to leave the United States, even though he was picked up by the Justice Department. We know Andreas Strassmeier was at Elohim City. That's in all the FBI documents, and that he was the explosives maker working with McVeigh. Correct, Jesse Trinidad?
Well, I know that the CIA, he was there. He was the explosive instructor, it's my understanding, and the weapons instructor. His father was high positioned in the German government, and the FBI knew he was leaving after the bombing to Mexico, and a former CIA person is reported to have escorted him out of the country and back to Germany.
Okay. Anything else, Steve? He hung up. I think that guy calls. I think he can't imagine somebody from Germany could do something wrong. There's another camp that thinks Germany is pure on everything. It's very strange. Just like Reuters admitted, the Germans were caught staging terror attacks last week, and it's very, very odd. He calls routinely, though. I think that's along the lines of what he was trying to say. My IM crashed here, John. Give me the next caller, please.
Chris in Florida.
Okay, Chris in Florida, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, I'd like you to elaborate a little bit more on how the Southern Poverty Law Center had prior knowledge of how they funded or knew about Elohim City. Because if I could explain quickly, I'm trying to expose them as the race baiters they are. At my local non-commercial community-supported radio station, had Mark Potok on of the Southern Poverty Law Center. I know he's written to you. And on their 1 o'clock show on November 18th, if you want to check out their archives. And then I got to confront him but unfortunately he had to leave the airport.
Well, Potok's written about me, and they say there is no world government, there is no North American Union, there is no Trans-Texas Corridor, NAFTA highways. Doesn't matter if it's been in hundreds of newspapers the last 2 months. Doesn't matter if it's in the Financial Times of London today. In fact, bring me those. Let's put those articles up on screen. It doesn't matter. They just say that it doesn't exist. And so, Jesse, why don't you go over the FBI documents that, the specifics that basically the leadership of the Elohim Scene Nazi compound was basically Southern Poverty Law, correct?
All I know is the FBI documents refer to the Southern Poverty Law Center and Southern Poverty Law Center informants. The Southern Poverty Law Center has denied that they were involved. Can I swear they were? I can't. All I can tell you is that the FBI says they were. Or at least the documents reference repeated. My FOIA request, the government came back with 150 pages of documents where the Southern Poverty Law Center is mentioned with the FBI almost every page. And again, in fairness to them, the Southern Poverty Law Center says it wasn't us. And when I say, well, why in the hell would the FBI put your name on their documents if you weren't involved? But were they? I don't know.
No, I'm sure everything's fine. I'm sure they haven't done anything wrong. They're good people. They just want to ban free speech in America and lie about good people and mix them in with horrible folks. Anything else, sir?
Well, yes, it's interesting that the person who responded or tried to rebut my referencing the Salt Lake City Tribune articles, my statement said that, referred the listeners to the Truth Dig article, where it does say that, even though Mark Potok denied knowledge, prior knowledge, it says that even though Morris Dees earlier, when asked at a meeting at Southeastern Oklahoma State University whether his organization had any inside source at Elohim City, made no such denial. Rather, he dodged the question, acknowledging that his organization worked closely with the FBI and other federal agencies, but omitting any precise details.
Sure. Well, let's be clear. They had their own informants inside that went back to the FBI and said, let's stop them. And then they would indict their own informants who were trying to become FBI agents to shut them up.
Well, it'd be nice if they would tell the truth, because, like you said, it would serve them better.
All right. Appreciate the call. Who's up next after him, John?
Gloria in OK.
Okay. Gloria in Oklahoma. Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
My name is Gloria Chipman, and I'm calling from Oklahoma City. I lost my husband in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Gloria.
Thank you. And we have a group here called VOTIVS, Victims of Terrorism Information and Vital Exchange Services. We initially started in August of 2001 trying to help the other family members and survivors. They still needed counseling and help with their bills and things. And then we heard about Jesse Trinidou. And on the air, I'd just like to say we are indebted to Jesse Trinidou for sharing with us information and passing it on and having it on various websites. We would like to also ask your listeners if you would please contact your congressional representatives and the judiciary. We're calling for congressional hearings with a special prosecutor into the Oklahoma City bombing.
Maybe they'll appoint Eric Holder.
Oh, dear.
Because Janet Reno appointed deputy director of the Waco probe was the person that ran Waco. So, maybe they'll appoint John Gotti to investigate John Gotti. But, no, I mean, I think it is a good idea to always call for investigations because even in whitewashes, things come out. Any comments on a new investigation, Jesse Trinidou?
I don't think Mrs. Chipman and I have been in contact for years now, and I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but the more former Reno Clinton Justice Department people we bring on board in this administration, the less likely that is to happen. Eric Holder is not going to go back and open up the my brother's murder, nor will he open up the Oklahoma City bombing. But that doesn't mean that it can't be done through the state, and that's why we put the reward up for my brother's cases. There are a lot of people who know what happened.
$250,000 for information leading to the identification and indictment or what of
the conviction of the FBI agents who did this or the FBI operatives.
Absolutely. All right. Gloria, anything else? Sorry to hear about your husband.
Well, thank you. Again, have your, like I believe you or Jesse said earlier, have your listeners write about Eric Holder, write to your congressman, and include the Oklahoma City bombing and hearings that need to be done.
All right. Gloria, good to hear from you. And really, again, you know, here I am on air, cynically, I'm trying to show people how corrupt it is, but cynically talking about him killing people. And these are real people. That was her husband, Jesse Trinidou's brother's a real person murdered. And if they can murder them, they can murder you. And if they can get away with that, it'll be bigger next time. And that's the whole point about corruption and evil. I'm going to let you go, Jesse Trinidou. As new things develop, please contact us again. And I would love to break any other news or information you have, any other documents that are now public you want us to post on Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. I would be really happy to put those up. In the last minute we've got left, give us the website. Tell us about the reward.
The website, again, is my brother's initials, Kenneth Michael Trinidou. It's KMTReward.com, one word, KMTReward.com. It's $250,000 for the FBI agents who killed my brother. And as I said, there are lots of people who know what happened. And they just have no incentive to come forward, or they're afraid to come forward. And hopefully this money will give them the incentive. And the money's there. I mean, we got enough from that judgment. This is federal government money, too.
Yeah, we will never defeat the globalists, the New World Order, the corrupt, the forces of darkness, if good people don't stand up and fight back. And you've done that, and look at all the success you've had. You've been through incredible tribulation, but we wouldn't have any liberty, any freedom. Corruption would just run wild if it wasn't for good people throughout history fighting back against it. So that's why we commend you, Jesse Trinidou. It was great having you on. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. I'm going to come back in the final segment and blow these up and put them on the TV screen. I want you to see the Financial Times of London headline out there, and I want you to ask Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, all these gatekeepers, hey, there's no world government. Why are there hundreds of mainstream news articles with top policy people saying they're setting up a world government, it's going to be tyrannical, and that's good? See, tyranny is good, and world taxes are good. Now, there's the Financial Times of London. I'm going to put this up on screen for you.
Yep.
There is the article today, and we're going to put a blow-up of that on screen when we get back. Stay with us.
Attention.
In fact, I'm going to skip this break. Paul, can you blow this up for me so I can put it up on screen? Well, that's all right. I can just go with the just somebody dismantled over here, the document cam. So maybe I can get that back in an operative position. We're in the new studio, folks. It's going to be so much better. This is a tiny little closet that I'm in, and we're going to have document cams that are always on and always set. So I'll be able to do that for everybody. Let's go ahead and punch up the document cam, please. So when we come back to the full audience, I can show all of that to them. Get my lights on here. Oh, God, this country's so screwed up. I wonder why the lights aren't turning on. There they are. Okay, there we go. So I can show this to everybody. That is the Financial Times of London for everyone. And you can see it. They talk about how they want to get our guns. Our guns are a problem. Got to get those guns, those evil Americans with guns. How they've got to soothe us and how they've always soothed us deceptively to not let us know about it. And if you just Google New World Order, a few weeks ago I Googled it on Google News, you know, not on Google Video, but from news stories. There were thousands, 5,400 hits, hundreds and hundreds a day of mainstream news articles saying, oh, the world financial crisis is so terrible. We have to have world government to save us from it. And that's what this says. So the only deceptive part about it is that they're acting like they didn't stage the economic crisis when this very paper has admitted it was staged to consolidate banking. And then they talk about how tyranny is good. Democracy has, you know, a republic's freedom has to be gotten rid of. Global government is real. It's about global government. Taking our freedoms are good. They know best. And this is the most prestigious newspaper in the world, Financial Times of London. So we're going to come back to the full audience here for everybody. And I want to challenge Rush Limbaugh and the rest of them to deal with this, to face this. But they can't. I mean, they could have a world emperor on TV ruling everything. Everyone would have to bow down to him 10 times a day. And Limbaugh would say, hey, I just took 25 Oxycontins. There's no such thing. And I mean, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of these fake punks neutralizing conservatives. Here we go. On the screen for PrisonPlanet.tv members, this will be ripped to the four corners of the web, and that's great. Financial Times of London, and now for a world government. And this is their foreign and international affairs editor, Gideon Raikman. And now for a world government. Now, this isn't just the Financial Times of London, the most prestigious newspaper in the world, more than the New York Times, more than the Wall Street Journal, the global paper of record. This thing is subscribed to all over the world. In here, they admit, in previous articles, that they engineered the financial collapse for big banks to take over smaller banks, that they've cut off liquidity to the public to implode the world economy so the banks can consolidate. I've read those articles and shown those to you as they bragged, as they set this up the last 3 years. And here again, they just brag that it's a world government. They say that democracy will have to be gotten rid of, that a world government means that people won't have liberties anymore. Back here, they talk disdainfully about how, you know, the American people and their guns, they own guns. Oh, my God. It's horrible. They're going to fight world government. You know, it's just terrible that we can't. And they talk about how they soothingly have tried to deny world government so that we wouldn't get upset. And they brag about how they use the word world governance because the public's so stupid. They don't know governance in the dictionary means government. and they tell you, oh, you're an elite yuppie, you're an elite person, you know, you make $100,000 a year, you're a member of the elite, you know global government doesn't exist, Rush Limbaugh and the liberal websites, and not just the fake neocon ones, the fake conservative ones, but the little liberal websites, Huffington Post and places. Oh, none of that exists. Crazy. You're a racist. It's code for racism. And you're like, what is the code? Well, you just are racist. We all know that world government doesn't exist and that that's code for racism. Now, Paul Watson did another story about this that details it and links to some other documents and articles. Financial Times editorial admits agenda for dictatorial world government. Jaw-dropping report concedes that global governance is a euphemism for anti-democratic global government. They're going to take your roads, your power plants, privatize your local governments, but that doesn't mean that they're actually going to run things. You'll still pay taxes. It's just that they'll double, triple the prices, and they're not paying to take over. It's just given to them. So this is globalization, and there's Paul Watson's article about it. But again, hundreds of newspapers every few days are saying world government, the bankers will save you. You'll pay carbon taxes to them. It's just going to be a Valhalla. I had the author, Rothkopf of Superclass, who was in the Washington Post admitting it's world government a few months ago. I had him on. They knew who I was. You know, when we called him up to have him on, during the breaks, he's like, oh, we all know who you are, Alex Jones. You're not going to stop our global government, basically, is what he was telling me. John Harmon heard that. Then he'd come back on air and go, it's fine. Global government's good. It's no big deal. You know, just accept it. These are foreign institutions controlling the population. And that's what we are dealing with here, is global government. But there is the Financial Times of London report right there for you. Folks, in closing, we had the General Hamid Ghul on today. Huge interview. He was on at the very start of the show that restarts on the streams, dealing with government-sponsored terrorism and a lot more. So that is coming up with the General. Here's a shot of him right here for you. That is coming up in the rebroadcast at Infowars.com and then on AM and FMs across the country later. We need your financial support to continue on and expand what we're doing. Please go to Infowars.com, get a PrisonPlanet.tv membership, share your passcode with others, get the word out. Buy books and videos at Infowars.com. Give them as Christmas gifts. Give the gift of truth and information today. That's what the spirit of giving is really about, is unlocking people's minds. God bless you all. Rebroadcast starts now.